I'm not a bad guy. I'm not a good guy. I'm the guy.
Yeah, well, not anymore, you're not.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 447 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, June 26, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. Yes, Roman Reigns is taking a 30-day vacation. We'll talk about why here in a second. Talk about Kurt Angle. Whole bunch of other stuff to get to. But first, thank you to everybody who has been using our Audible URL, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. That is our link. If you would like to sign up for the Audible service and give it a shot, free, 30 days, no charge. And as part of that trial, you get one free audiobook that you download and get to keep no matter what. So even if you cancel before the 30 days is up, you don't like Audible, it's not your thing, you get to keep your free book. So if you haven't already used the URL, if you want to spread it around to friends and family, you can do so. audibletrial.com/solidmonster is the link to use. Also want to let everybody know that if you like what you listen to each and every week, you can make a PayPal donation on thesolidmonster.com. The PayPal button is always on the right-hand side of the page. I want to say thank you to everybody who supported the show this week. A thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, of course. Deadpool James Herrera. The Chosen Son, Andre Smith, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Samuel the Slayer, Cipperoni, Will the Alabama Crab Dangle Bullard, Nathan Monday Night Raleigh, Crime Boss Christopher Cavazos, Rude Boy Rusty Scott, Mean Macaulay Rob, Chris Killswitch Kukler, Rolex Robin Party, Demonic Devin Laney, Taboo Alex Tangen, Your Girlfriend's Crush Gary Smith, Rock On the Survivor Chiduri, and the California Kid Gabriel Solis. Thank you very much for the very kind donations this past week. Again, thesolidmonster.com is the place to go for that. And that leads me to this. So I have two announcements I want to make here at the top of the show. Pretty cool stuff. All positive here. All good announcements. The first one is about our shirts on Pro Wrestling Tees. There is going to be a 4th of July sale starting this Tuesday, June 28th at noon Central Time, so that's 1 o'clock Eastern, and running through the day after Independence Day. So it's going through the following Tuesday, July 5th, also at 12 p.m. Central Time. It'll be 20% off everything in our store, so we've got about 26 shirts, I think, by my last count up in there, so over two dozen. If you've been waiting to buy a shirt, this is the time to do it. Starting Tuesday, if you buy a shirt, or two, or three. We actually had two people buy three shirts yesterday, which I thought was amazing, and I thank both of them for that. But within, like, minutes of each other, I had these two, one person, I think, in California, one in the UK, each one bought three shirts, which was very cool. So however many shirts you want, at checkout, when you put it in your cart, make sure you use the code America, not Merca. Merca's not going to work. It's got to be America. And it will get you 20% off your order. So again, the link to our store is prowrestlingtees.com/solidmonstersoundsoff. I'm sure I'll be posting the link every couple of days up on Twitter and Facebook. You can click on it there. But take advantage of it. Usually we only do these once a year around Thanksgiving. Usually it's a Black Friday sale, but we're doing a 4th of July one this year. So definitely take advantage of that. The second announcement concerns a meetup for SummerSlam. I have a lot of you who have been asking me about this here as we get closer. Now it's officially summertime. A lot of you have asked about doing a meetup in Brooklyn that weekend, you know, similar to what we did in Dallas after WrestleMania a few months ago. I can announce that we are doing a meetup, an official Sound Off meetup. There will be no live podcast. I want to make that clear. Just logistically, it would have been a nightmare, especially to do it the day of SummerSlam. You know, when we did the live show in Dallas, we did it that Monday, so it was actually the day after WrestleMania. It was a lot easier to do that. I don't know, you know, come WrestleMania next year, I don't know exactly which day. It's not locked in yet. We are planning on doing another meetup/live podcast in Orlando. I don't know if it'll be WrestleMania weekend, if it'll be the Monday after. I think we want to try to do it WrestleMania weekend just because some of you guys I know fly home after the pay-per-view. But logistically, we'll do it on whatever day makes the most sense. I think the live show portion is going to be an annual WrestleMania thing. So this is not a live show, although we are going to do a show, you know, myself, Noah Mark, most likely Brian Blade. We'll do SummerSlam predictions and all that at some point that weekend. This is strictly for a meetup. We are going to be doing it on SummerSlam Day. So that's Sunday, August 21st at 2 p.m. And I'm also happy to announce that in doing so, we are partnering with Mania Crawl. Jamie, who's the one who runs Mania Crawl, he does a great job with these things. He's done a few crawls, usually over WrestleMania weekend. He had something like 350 people, I think, out for the one in Dallas, which was pretty incredible. He's helped raise money in doing so before for Connor's Cure and the Children's Hospital. He came to our live sound off in Dallas, and from there, we pretty much got the ball rolling. You know, we had the early conversations. We said this is something we might want to do together, and, you know, partnering up come summertime, and that's what we're doing. But I want to make it clear, even though it's, you know, Mania Crawl, this is not a crawl. We pick one location. We're doing this at one place. It is a German beer hall called the KBH, which is within walking distance of the arena. That was the most important thing. Since we're doing it a few hours before SummerSlam, it had to be within walking distance of the Barclays Center. And it is. I think it's less than 3 blocks away from the building. So it's the perfect location. It's an international beer hall. It's right there in the middle of Brooklyn in Park Slope. I haven't been there yet, but Jamie, you know, who runs Mania Crawl, he has. In fact, I think this is one of the places they hit on their crawl last year. And people liked it so much, they decided to just ditch the last bar and stay there. They've got 30 beers on draft. They've got bottled beer. They've got food, most importantly. They've got a pool table, air hockey, some other stuff in there. So should be a fun time. The address, so you have it. And this is all going to go, it'll be in an invite I'm going to put together online. But the address, it's 84 St. Mark's Place in Park Slope. It's between 4th and 5th Avenue. I'm going to have all that information in the Facebook invite that I'm putting together. That's going to go up on our fan page on Facebook. So if you're planning on attending or you think you may be able to attend, and again, you can bring as many people as you want. If you want to bring friends, then hey, the more the merrier. But if you think you might be there, please RSVP on that page so we can try to get an accurate headcount. You can also sign up for free on maniacrawl.com. They have a sign-up page so that Jamie can also get an accurate headcount on his end. Either way, as long as you give us a sense that you might make it, that would be very much appreciated. So I'm looking forward to it. We had, again, every bit of 75 or 80 people at the Sound Off one on a Monday morning, you know, back in April, the day after Mania, which I was beyond happy with. And if we can have that many people, you know, combine that with the Mania Crawl folks, we can get a real decent number of people in this bar here. And it'd be great to meet everybody. You know, that's why we're doing this. The one in Dallas was a lot of fun. I've been meaning to hit up one of the Mania Crawl events. I haven't been able to so far. So I figure, well, I will have no choice now but to go to the Mania Crawl event if we just pool our resources together. So hopefully we'll see a lot of you guys there. It should be a lot of fun. Also, I want to mention that we are closing in on 20,000 subscribers for our YouTube channel, which is very cool. It's a channel that just has bonus content. It's not even like the Sound Off is on there. It's all bonus content. We're almost at 20,000 subs. So if you are not a subscriber on there, please head over there, youtube.com/thesolemonster. You can hit the subscribe button. I would very much appreciate that. One of the reasons that you should subscribe is that when a new video goes up, you will be alerted. I did a Money in the Bank review for the pay-per-view. I didn't mention that at all on the show last weekend. I just did it. A lot of those post-pay-per-view wrap-ups, I don't promote them in advance, and there's a very good reason for it, because I don't know usually until the last minute if I'm even going to do one. So I don't want to go on the show here and promote the fact that I'm going to do this, and then I don't do it. So if I decide to do it, I do it, and it goes up, and if you're a subscriber, I guess it must alert you, or it pops up in your inbox or something. There is a Money in the Bank review up there if you want my full thoughts on the pay-per-view from last weekend. I did take a poll on Twitter, over 25, almost 2,600 votes. 90% thumbs up, 10% thumbs down. If you remember last week on the show when I was giving the Money in the Bank predictions, I said that there was really no reason for this poll to be any less than like 70-30 or 80-20, because if the three top matches on that pay-per-view delivered, it almost wouldn't even matter what the undercard was. This was going to be a thumbs-up show because those top three matches were... I mean, look at the talent in the Money in the Bank match. Cena versus AJ Styles, Roman and Seth. And all three matches delivered. You know, Cena-Styles, in my opinion, was the match of the night. But all three matches were very good to excellent. I mean, I don't really see how you... I guess you could find fault in the finish of the Cena-Styles match the way it went down. But in terms of the matches themselves and the cash-in at the end, I thought the top of the card was great. I thought the undercard... I don't want to say it sucked. I don't think it sucked. I just think it was boring. It was dull. And it did kind of drag the show a little bit. But once you hit those top three matches, I have no complaints. And really, these pay-per-views are built around their main events anyway. So those three matches delivered. And as far as 90% thumbs up, 10% thumbs down, probably not a coincidence for a show that had John Cena and Roman Reigns come out as losers. So... I think overall it was a thumbs up show. If you want my full thoughts, again, they're up on the YouTube channel. Let's talk about Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns was suspended this week for 30 days for violating WWE's wellness policy. WWE put out a statement that said, "We have suspended Joe Anoa'i, Roman Reigns, for 30 days, effective immediately for his first violation of the company's talent wellness policy." And Roman Reigns took to Twitter. He said, "I apologize to my family, friends, and fans for my mistake in violating WWE's wellness policy. No excuses. I own it." So what he failed for, we don't know, and we're not going to ever know because WWE does not make that public. But I said this on Twitter. This is why John Cena is and will continue to be, as long as he's around, the face of that company. He calls himself on TV, right? He calls himself the face that runs the place. That's what he's been calling himself. Well, you know what? That's the truth. And you can be skeptical about how he looks and whether he gets away with stuff that other people don't. There's no evidence of that. He's never failed a test that we know of. He doesn't get into trouble. You don't hear about him getting arrested or beating his girlfriend or anything like that. They send him overseas to speak Mandarin in China. He is the quintessential company guy. They want Roman Reigns to be that guy, and maybe he still will be. I don't think Vince is giving up on the guy. I don't think this is... I mean, believe me, this is absolutely not the end of the Roman Reigns experiment. But there's a reason why John Cena has been in the spot that he's been in for so long and why they rely on him so heavily. It's because he does whatever they ask of him, and he can be trusted. He has a built-in trust between himself and the company. They know they can rely on him, and they're not going to wake up one morning to some kind of shocking news. Now, credit to Roman, you know, he manned up. He didn't make excuses like a lot of other guys do. You know, and look, sometimes maybe athletes, they have valid excuses. Sometimes guys have gotten off suspensions for proving that it was something that, you know, maybe wasn't, you know, illegal or it was some kind of an error or something like that. It's rare, but it does happen. But still, I mean, how many times have we heard about fighters? How many times have we heard about baseball players talk about tainted this, tainted that, I didn't know what I put in my body, and then they're full of shit. Whatever it was that Roman Reigns did, I just say good on him for not making any excuses. It was only a few weeks ago I talked about how, you know, we never hear about any of the big names getting popped by the wellness policy. We hear about Hornswoggle. We hear about Adam Rose. But we don't hear about top guys. And here we are now, and I mean, John Cena aside, you can't go any higher up the food chain than Roman Reigns. So all of a sudden, you look back at Money in the Bank last weekend, and that clean pinfall loss to Seth Rollins makes all the sense in the world when you consider that prior to that match, and I had to go on the trusty Internet Wrestling Database to confirm this, but one of you guys emailed me, and I almost couldn't believe it. But from what I'm seeing, it looks like it's true. If you go back prior to last Sunday, you would have to go all the way back to FCW in January of 2012 to find a clean singles pinfall loss for Roman Reigns. He lost to Leo Kruger, which is kind of funny. I'm talking about wellness and suspensions. Now, of course, a good chunk of his run, once he got called up to the main roster, were tag team matches with Seth Rollins and six-man tags with Rollins and Ambrose. But still, I mean, that's a long time to go without a clean pinfall loss. So WWE apparently knew about the failure even before Money in the Bank, which of course begs the question, why then do you set up a three-way for the next pay-per-view the very next night if they knew about this? And the answer is pretty simple, because it's only a 30-day suspension. You know, after the SmackDown tapings on Tuesday, it looks like it's all systems go. They set up that triple threat match for Battleground on Raw last Monday between Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, and Roman Reigns. And look, it's always possible that, you know, SmackDown was on Tuesday. Even if they had prior knowledge of the suspension, they didn't have a whole lot of time to come up with a plan B. Maybe they just didn't acknowledge the Roman thing at all, which apparently they didn't. And it looks like, you know, all systems go for the triple threat match, and they just needed a few extra days to think things over. And maybe tomorrow night on Raw, they come up with some kind of excuse to turn it into a singles match, and they take Roman out of the picture. It's possible. I'm not expecting that, but it's possible. But for now, the match is still taking place. Now, Battleground is on July 24th. July 24th is 3 days after Roman's suspension comes to an end. So my view is this. He fucked up. Okay? He fucked up big time. He embarrassed himself. He embarrassed the company. The company, which has been pushing him so hard for the last, you know, 2 years, and really it's been longer than that. This is the same guy who headlined their biggest WrestleMania of all time. He pinned Triple H to win the world title. And now, just a few months later, he's suspended. And we don't know what he did. Okay? Did he take steroids? Did he, you know, did his doctor prescribe him something that he didn't tell them about? You know, you remember that photo of him drinking out of that mug that said Smart Tears on it? Okay, maybe that fan spiked his drink. Okay, who knows? We don't know. His tweet was very vague. He took responsibility for violating the policy, but we don't know exactly what he did. It's his first violation, and I think that's one of the key things here. It's his very first violation. You get 30 days for a first violation. Those 30 days are up on July 21st. As far as I'm concerned, he's good to go for the next pay-per-view. His suspension is not for 34 days. It's not for 38 days. It's not for 60 days. Okay, I would not take him out of that main event. I assume the only reason they're even doing it at Battleground instead of SummerSlam is because of the draft. There's a very good chance these guys don't all end up on the same show. But, now here's the other key. You cannot put this guy in the championship match in his first match back and have him win the title. That is just, it's not even a consideration. It cannot even be a consideration. You can't do that. It's one thing to keep him in the match. You've already announced it, but to have him win coming off the suspension, that would be ridiculous. He needs to eat the pinfall in that match. And here's the other thing they need to do. And I know some people are going to say, well, you're just rewarding bad behavior by doing all of this. But again, it's the guy's first offense. Suspending him without pay, I assume it's without pay, and the embarrassment of all of this. Because I'm looking at all these tweets and all these comments, and it's easy to crack jokes and poke fun at the guy. Even in the intro I did here at the top of the show, you know, you're kind of playing it for humor. But I mean, there were people going way overboard here, and I can't tell you how many times I saw the same joke about 25 different times. Like, after a while, it's not funny anymore. But this guy, believe me, just the sheer embarrassment that this guy is probably going through right now, and is going to go through when he comes back. Okay, to me, between that and the suspension, that's punishment enough. But when he comes back, there's no more acting heelish the way he was at Money in the Bank. That match was weird. It was a good match, but it was weird because Seth Rollins was just getting his ass kicked most of the time by Roman. Roman was very subtly acting heelish. Rollins had the big comeback. He got the clean pinfall win in the end. If you didn't know any better, if you weren't paying attention to WWE television leading up to this match, you would think that Seth Rollins was the babyface and Roman Reigns was the heel. Only they're not. So no more beating around the bush. You know, kind of walking a fine line here between heel and babyface, or having Reigns go out on TV the way they did the next night and tell them to shut their mouths, okay, as if that's supposed to get people to cheer for him. If ever there was a time to turn this guy heel, now is the time. Stop dancing around it and just do it. Now, there was an expression that I heard a long time ago, that you can't be half pregnant. And I was like, that's a weird phrase, but it's true. You can't be half and half. You can't do that. You're either this or you're that. We don't really have any, like, tweeners anymore. I don't even know. I mean, do they even exist? You're either a heel or you're a babyface. And in the case of Roman Reigns, you know, it's time to choose one way or the other. And I mean, they've been pretty solid in the babyface camp. And I think now with this, you know what? If there was a time to say, maybe we should give this a shot. This is it. This poor bastard is going to be flat out abused by these crowds when he comes back. If you thought it was bad before, you just wait. I mean, I can't wait for all the Roman Roids chants or take a piss test. Okay, I'm sure the fans are going to get very creative with it. I know they say Americans love a good comeback story in sports. This is different. Wrestling fans are different. There is a level of hate and vitriol for this guy that just borders on the absurd. And this is only going to make it that much worse. I say, use that. Use that to get massive heat on this guy when he comes back. You've got the next month to see how Dean Ambrose does on top with the title. Maybe he proves himself to be, a drawing card. Maybe he catches fire. Because right now, I still see Dean Ambrose as a placeholder for someone else, whether it's Roman or Seth or whoever. I'm not convinced that they see this guy as a top guy. I don't buy that. I would love to sit here and say, hey, this guy worked his ass off and he earned that spot and the company finally woke up. The reality is, he lucked into it. He lucked into it. It's pretty obvious he lucked into it. But maybe he takes off. And if he takes off, then you got Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins, who's a heel right now, I think would be an even better babyface. I don't know why he wasn't from the beginning. So it's not as though if you turn Roman Reigns, you have nobody to fill his shoes. Give Rollins a shot. You've got Ambrose, and you can give Rollins a shot too. I think he would do well. And you still have John Cena. And maybe Rollins or Balor. Okay, Balor's probably going to be coming up soon. Then with Roman as one of your top heels, you've got AJ Styles. Maybe on the other brand, he could be a top heel. And then who knows who else they're going to bring up from NXT. I mean, I had all but given up on the idea of them turning Roman Reigns. I mean, I talked about it for, you know, however long I talked about it for, and then it became pretty obvious as the feud went along with AJ Styles, as hard as they put Reigns over there, and he beat him twice, it's like, all right, you know what? I'm going to stop talking about this because it's pretty obvious that this is just falling on deaf ears. But this, I think, this gives him an out. I think this changes things, especially if Ambrose does do well as champion. Turn all that hate for Roman Reigns into dollar signs. Because for all the women who scream for this guy when he walks out, when you look out into those crowds, watch Raw, watch SmackDown at the house shows, how many of those 10,000 or 12,000 or 15,000 people are women? You think it's the majority? Because I'm not seeing that. I look out into that crowd, I don't see the majority of them being women. They're a vocal minority, but they're not a majority. The majority of them are still men. Older men, younger men, but these crowds are predominantly made up of men. And a lot of those men, okay, not all of them, but a lot of them, I think, would pay money to see this smug, arrogant wellness violator, Roman Reigns, get punched in the mouth. We now have a date for the draft lottery. It'll take place on the first live SmackDown, July 19th. Kurt Angle was a guest on Mark Madden's radio show earlier in the week and said that he was coming back to WWE. He just didn't know when. He said he had a conversation with Vince McMahon and Triple H about 6 weeks ago that was very positive. And then on Thursday, Dave Meltzer, I guess, reached out to WWE, and WWE denied that Kurt Angle was coming back to the company. Kurt then issued a statement on his Facebook page saying things got blown out of proportion and he didn't expect to be in wrestling much longer. So I said last week, and again, when Kurt left TNA, he said he was going to take a year off from wrestling, and we've already seen him have matches with Rey Mysterio and with Zack Sabre Jr. So I hear these statements being made. I read these statements on Facebook and stuff, and I don't believe any of it. I don't know what to believe in a way, but I don't take what I hear here for face value. Okay, I said last week if Kurt Angle could pass a physical, which I'm not sure that he can, but if he can, you know, I would love to see him have a handful of big matches each year. I also wouldn't be so quick to take WWE's denial about this as gospel, like I said. Maybe they made a deal and they're pissed that Kurt leaked it, but anyway, I was thinking about this, and I want to get your guys' feedback on this. Let's say that he does come back. Let's say this is all a front, and whether it's around the draft, it could be later on, but let's say Kurt does come back, okay? The more I think about what Kurt Angle could do, what do you do with this guy? You know, he's already in his mid-40s, late-40s. His body is just beaten to shit. His neck is beaten to shit. He's had his demons and his issues before. What do you do with this guy? You can't make him a full-time guy. I mean, Kurt said it himself. You know, he would not come back for a full-time gig. It would kill him. It would kill him. And I know he's talked about wanting to mentor, manage American Alpha. He's big fans of those guys. Here's an idea that I think would solve the question of what to do with Kurt Angle if he came back to WWE. How to get him on TV full-time and still only have him wrestle a few times a year. You want to get SmackDown off to a hot start? You make him the general manager. He's already been the GM of SmackDown many, many years ago, probably like a decade ago at this point. I think 2005, right? 2004, 2005. Make him the GM. He picks John Cena as his number one draft pick because Cena and Roman Reigns, they should be on separate shows. And even though Reigns is technically going to miss the draft, he's not going to be on TV for it, he will still be drafted, and I still believe that he'll be the top pick for Raw. So you can keep Reigns on Raw, you move Cena over to SmackDown, Kurt Angle could draft Cena. And then you have him draft AJ Styles, especially since I would love to, now this is selfish, but I would love to see Kurt Angle work another match at some point with AJ Styles. I know they had a few matches in TNA, so you could, that could be something down the road that you build to, especially since AJ's a heel now. So you got Cena, you've got Styles, you've got Finn Balor. So, you know, Kurt can make a big splash by signing one of the biggest names in NXT. And also what happens there is you get Balor and the Club on the same show, which means Anderson and Gallows would go to SmackDown as well. And Kurt could also draft American Alpha. And I didn't check out the tapings or anything. I know they just had some NXT tapings. I don't read that stuff. But they took the titles off American Alpha at the last TakeOver show. And in my mind, the only way that makes sense, because it was their first title defense, why would you cut it short so quickly? The only way that makes sense is because they knew, or at least Triple H had a sense that these guys were going to get called up. And so we have to get the belts off of them. So Kurt drafts American Alpha. I think Angle should be the one to draft them to SmackDown. And yeah, I'm thinking about that, and I could picture it now. Maybe 3 months down the road, 6 months down the road, I could picture Kurt Angle and American Alpha in six-mans against AJ Styles, Karl Anderson, and Luke Gallows. If I'm WWE, that's the idea that I'm pitching to Kurt. Now, one of you wrote into the mailbag 2 weeks ago here on the show, you pitched Daniel Bryan for SmackDown GM. And I said, you know what? That'd be a fine idea. I wouldn't mind having Daniel Bryan back on TV, Raw GM or SmackDown GM. I think that would be kind of cool. And he's a babyface, right? Because I'm sick to death of all the heel authority figures. We've kind of gotten a little bit of a break from that since the authority went away. I think that's a positive thing. I would keep that going. And then after a while, I'm sure you could always bring back a heel authority figure after some time. But I feel like we need like a little bit of a break from it. And William Regal, I think, does very well in the role. They have him in on NXT. It's actually kind of refreshing. So I thought the Daniel Bryan thing would be a good idea, but they've since announced him as an announcer, a commentator for the Cruiserweight Classic, which I'm going to talk about here in a second. As far as Raw goes, if you have Kurt on SmackDown, you know, I was thinking of other big names that they're, you know, have under contract, but they're not doing anything with right now. I think if you have Angle, let's say, on SmackDown, you've got to counter with somebody equally as big for Raw. You can't just have Shane McMahon or Stephanie McMahon do it. So who do you go with? Well, why not Sting? As far as I know, Sting is still under contract. I thought he was fantastic toward the end there in TNA, just verbally, not in the ring, but like verbally. I thought it was as good as I've ever seen him. He was a much better promo in TNA than he ever was in WCW. I mean, forget the year and a half he didn't speak. You could, you know, forget that. But I thought, you know, for all the stuff you could say about TNA, and I thought TNA had some really, you know, good years there, like 2012 into 2013. They had a good thing going there for a while before it started to fall off a cliff and I stopped watching. But one of the shining things about the TNA product again was, I thought, Sting's promos. So if he's not wrestling but he's on the microphone, I think he would handle himself just fine. You know, he doesn't even necessarily need to be there every week. You don't have to fly him in for TV every single week. Kurt Angle doesn't have to either. I mean, I know they've been building it up as this rivalry between Shane McMahon and Stephanie McMahon, and they may have a long-term plan here. And I would at some point like to see some interaction on TV or a feud being built between Triple H and Shane, especially after watching Shane's podcast. I thought Shane's podcast was, you know, it was okay. I didn't really learn anything new from it. But one of the interesting things that Mick Foley did bring up on that podcast is when he asked about Shane, how he felt about, I think, Stephanie, and how he felt about Triple H. And Shane was like, well, of course, she's my sister. I love her. We get along just fine. And Foley asked him about Triple H, and I wish I could remember exactly, like, verbatim what his answer was, but it was something like, it was almost like, here's what it was. He asked him about Triple H, and his response was something to the effect of, he makes my sister happy. He makes my sister happy. And I thought, wow. Never have I heard someone say so much by saying so little. And so I think if you draw on that, if you draw from whatever really may be going on there, whatever real feelings there may be there, I think that can make for some pretty compelling television. So if that's the direction they're going in, then that's cool. I hope they get there at some point. I'm not saying take Shane and Stephanie off TV completely, but I think at this point, they had those two podiums on TV, like on Raw, that were kind of empty. It was almost like symbolic, like in a few weeks when we have the draft, there's going to be a GM that goes to the Raw podium and a GM that goes to the SmackDown podium. And we've seen Shane and Stephanie on TV quarreling. I'm going to be the GM. No, I'm going to be the GM. At this point, it would be a disappointment if they just plug the two of them in there. It's almost like they have to go with two other people. And you could still keep them involved, I think, if you want to have each one of them maybe, you know, you could have Vince come out and say, neither one of you are going to be running Raw and SmackDown. And maybe Shane oversees one of the GMs and Stephanie can kind of oversee the other one. But I would, you know, leave the actual matchmaking to whoever the GMs are that they pick. However you want to explain it, you can come up with whatever explanation you want to. And WWE usually doesn't even care about coming up with explanations on how to explain things. But the Kurt Angle thing, I like that idea a lot. And so despite everything we heard this week, I remain unconvinced that Kurt is not coming back to WWE. I think at some point he absolutely will. Maybe it won't be for the draft, but I would reach out to him. I would reach out to him and say, look, you know, Kurt's obviously still got a big name. He's got a big profile. He may be the biggest name that's been gone the longest time that they could probably use. And I think if you want to make a splash with SmackDown, that's the way you, and also keep him out of the ring enough to where he's not killing himself, that's the way to do it. So I remember a few weeks ago when Jerry Lawler let it leak that WWE was planning split brand pay-per-views after the draft. Well, WWE has not confirmed this yet, but apparently Sky Italy has. They've released a schedule of upcoming WWE special events, pay-per-views, call them whatever the hell you want. And they are, in fact, returning to split-brand shows, thanks to the draft. And I have the schedule in front of me here, so I'll just read some of these dates. So this is not really kicking in until after SummerSlam, so which is kind of weird, because they're having the draft on July 19th, but all of this split-brand stuff doesn't really kick in for another month and a half. Actually, over a month, yeah. So they have Backlash back on the schedule. I always liked the Backlash name. Made more sense coming the month after WrestleMania, but kind of cool that they're bringing that one back on September 11th. That's a SmackDown brand event. On September 25th, what used to be Night of Champions is now Clash of Champions. So it's not Clash of the Champions. I don't know why. It's Clash of Champions, but also, I thought, cool move. I wanted them to bring back Clash of the Champions when they first debuted Night of Champions. I'm like, why do they have to change it? I mean, that's kind of their MO, but when they first debuted Night of Champions years ago, I didn't understand why they didn't just use the Clash name, unless they didn't have the rights to it. I mean, there's been rumors that that's the reason why they haven't used Halloween Havoc, is that for whatever reason, there's some kind of a trademark hang-up. They don't own the name. They've been in court fighting for it for years. I don't know if that's true, but I have no other explanation other than a legal one as to why they wouldn't have just used the Clash of the Champions name from day one. It's almost like they have to put their stamp on things. We can't acknowledge that we didn't come up with this idea. You know, War Games. No, we'll do the Elimination Chamber instead. It's like, dude, just acknowledge the fact that there are some names and there are some ideas that you didn't come up with that are pretty fucking cool, and just go with it. So anyway, we're getting Clash of Champions now instead of Night of Champions. That's going to be a Raw brand event on September 25th. They're bringing back No Mercy. That'll be a SmackDown show. And then Roadblock. This will be the second Roadblock of the year. That is now going to be a Raw show. That is on December 18. And so the big four will be Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and Survivor Series, even though Survivor Series has not been a, I don't think, has really been a big four event for years. Probably going back to when they brought The Rock back. I guess that kind of made it a big deal. But maybe now with the draft, they're going to have some kind of a, you know, Raw versus SmackDown Survivor Series match. I sound like a broken record with this, but I pitched this idea years ago. I'll pitch it again now. And you know what? With the brand split, makes even more sense. If ever there was a time to bring back War Games, whether it's one ring, two rings, it really should be two rings, but I don't see them blocking out enough seats for that. But the whole concept of War Games, the name War Games, right? That works as part of Survivor Series. But now you've got two brands, and you could do Raw vs. SmackDown in a War Games match at Survivor Series. To me, that would make Survivor Series, again, one of the big four. Otherwise, you know, it's just, I mean, now it's just another show. There's nothing big about it. I wouldn't even argue Money in the Bank is one of the big four. Money in the Bank has replaced Survivor Series as one of the big four. So you've got to do something to make Survivor Series feel special again. I think that would be, you know, one way of doing it. So anyway, that's the schedule as it stands. I'm not a fan of this brand split stuff. It didn't work before. Maybe this time they got their act together and they're going to treat it like two very distinct, separate brands, except for those big shows when you have some mixing. Maybe they'll surprise me. Maybe they will surprise me. I am skeptical. I am skeptical about that. Daniel Bryan, mentioned him before. He is back. He's been away from wrestling for a few months. And I guess he's feeling well enough about it to kind of ease his way back into it now. He is going to join Mauro Ranallo as the announcers for the Cruiserweight Classic. The Cruiserweight Classic kicks off July 13th on the network. It's going to air every Wednesday for an hour after NXT. They're having a special on July 6th, so the week before the official start. They're having a special called Bracketology. I guess it's going to be Mauro Ranallo, Daniel Bryan, Corey Graves talking about all of the first round tournament matches. Apparently they're going to treat this like more of a sporting event than an entertainment show. Of course, because Vince McMahon is not involved. So they're actually going to take more of a sports approach with this, which I'm looking forward to that a lot. I wish they would do more of that with the main product. So I'm very interested in that. I'm looking forward to that. I watched all of the introductions they had on Facebook for the 32 people in the Cruiserweight Classic. They had them all at Full Sail because they had the first batch of tapings already. Again, I didn't read through them, but they already have taped part of the tournament. Just be aware of that. And they introduced all of them at Full Sail. Of course, the ones that you would expect to get the biggest reactions got the biggest reactions. Zack Sabre Jr. got a huge reaction. Tajiri, Brian Kendrick, of course, Kota Ibushi, Cedric Alexander got a huge reaction. He just left Ring of Honor to be part of the Cruiserweight Classic. They're very strict about this 205-pound weight limit. They actually had weigh-ins that they aired also on their Facebook page the other week. So this is, they're taking this thing very seriously. I think this is awesome. I think this is exactly the sort of thing they should be using the network for. And they're finally starting to do, you know, they have specials like Beast in the East and all that. But I want to see stuff like this. Like, to me, this is fun. Just because it's so different than anything WWE has ever done before. I'm happy to see them at least try it. And if it takes off, this could become an annual thing. It could lead to the creation of a cruiserweight division on one of the shows. NXT, SmackDown, whatever. So this is all building to a two-hour live special on the network on September 14th. Yeah, the other thing also that I like about this, besides the fact that it's just fun and it is so different than what WWE would normally do, I think what makes it more fun and what's cool about this is that also for the, not the first time, I mean, they've had working relationships in the past with promotions, but for so many years, they have, it's like closing the border. You know, they have like Trump talking about, we're going to build a wall. It's like Vince McMahon built this wall. And he just refused to acknowledge anybody outside of WWE. To this day, he still won't allow TNA to be mentioned unless it's, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin's going to do whatever the hell he wants in his podcast. But you'll never hear the initials TNA mentioned on Raw or SmackDown. They would never acknowledge Ring of Honor. They would never acknowledge that there was even a wrestling world outside of their WWE bubble for so many years. Now that's starting to finally change. But for so many years, you know, you got JBL on commentary talking about this guy's the IWGP this and this, you know, Brock Lesnar is a former UFC champion. Go back 5 years, 10 years. That would never happen. And so now they've kind of knocked that wall down, and all of a sudden they're acknowledging the fact that, hey, you know, there's actual talent in these other places and in these different promotions and Evolve and Rev Pro and Ring of Honor and all over the world. They're letting Brock Lesnar fight in the UFC. It's like, what the fuck is going on this year? It's like bizarro world in WWE, and we're not even in Canada. So I like that. I like that, and I want to see more of that. And I'll tell you what, I'll tell you something else. I got an email from somebody asking me, hey, you know, what do you think about WWE working with these different promotions, and do you think that it's going to be a benefit? Of course it's going to be a benefit. It's going to be a benefit to everybody. It's going to benefit the promotions involved because they get some rub by working with the biggest company in the world. It's going to rub off well on WWE because they're creating pipelines into these companies to where they can take talent from there. You got to have talent to take from somewhere. And if you look at their own developmental system, really, if you look at the people they've cranked out of Full Sail who didn't come from the indies, you could probably count on one hand in the last couple of years, or the last few years, how many guys have come just from Full Sail, not Full Sail, but from the Performance Center, just straight out of the Performance Center, and they become like a big star. Hasn't really happened very often. A lot of the guys they rely on now, whether it's Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, AJ Styles, all these different people, they worked all over the world. They worked indies. They came from other places before they even came to the Performance Center, before they even came to NXT. Bobby Roode, Eric Young, Samoa Joe, Austin Aries, all these people. Finn Balor, they built an entire brand. All of NXT practically. I mean, these guys are carrying that brand on their shoulders. Roman Reigns, I'll give you that. Roman Reigns, I don't think worked indies, and they they kind of willed him into the top position, and I think he's done, you know, he's done well. Obviously, people don't like him very much. But, you know, he's not like an embarrassment or anything like that. I think he gets the short end of the stick. But, again, a lot of the guys, they are not homegrown talents. When you look at the lay of the land in that company right now and who they're relying on, both on the, I think, on the main roster and on NXT, it's guys that they pulled from these different promotions. So it's a positive for everybody involved. And I'd like to see more of that. CM Punk, he is going to be debuting, believe it or not, in this century. It is going to happen. It is not going to happen, though, at UFC 202. It is going to instead happen, his fight with Mickey Gall, at UFC 203, which is on September 10th in Cleveland, ironically in the very same building where he walked out before Raw the night after the Royal Rumble, after telling Vince McMahon and Triple H that he was quitting. Hopefully he can walk out of the building this time and he doesn't have to be carried out, because I don't think things are going to end very well for him on that show. But at least now we have an official date. Some anniversaries I want to mention from this past week. It has been 9 years since the Benoit murder-suicide. I listened to an interview that a woman, you know, Nancy Benoit, her sister Sandra, did an interview with Chris Jericho. Her only full-length interview since the murders. And I guess Bill Apter had been on YouTube or whatever pitching some wild conspiracy theory about what happened and Benoit didn't do it or something like that. And so she heard this and she's like, you know what, I got to put this stuff to rest once and for all. And she got together with Chris Jericho around the Royal Rumble at the beginning of the year. They did this long hour plus long interview, hour and a half. And he held on to it and only released it now to coincide with the anniversary. And I listened to it the other day. Again, I was on my way into court. I'm still doing the grand jury thing. I just got extended for 2 more months. So I'm on the bus. I'm on my way to court. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna listen to this. And I was riveted by the entire thing. I'm really happy I took the time to listen to it. It's obviously depressing, but it's also, I think, in a lot of ways, very informative and insightful about what was going on at the time with Chris, with Nancy. She also has a lot that she shares about what happened in the wake of the murders. Her family basically moved into the house for a while, and they were kind of stuck in there because of all the media circus outside. They almost couldn't even leave the home. But she was there. She saw the crime scene, not with the bodies, but she saw the crime scene after it happened. And one of the things that kind of surprised me was, you know, they were talking about what happened here, trying to figure out what happened. And we're never going to know exactly what happened and what set him off and what led to this. But she said this was not a situation where he just flew off the handle and he hit her and she fell and she hit her head, or like a momentary rage that Chris Benoit fell into. She said her sister was savagely murdered, like brutalized. This was a grisly murder. So whatever happened, whether he just lost his mind or whatever, or he snapped, once it happened, he just became a madman. This was not a momentary, like, oh my God, what have I done? This was a savage killing. And I think that's important for people to remember here. It was also interesting at one point they were talking about, you know, I thought she came across great in this interview. She didn't come across as somebody who was bitter or held grudges or anything like that. And she can understand certain people who, you know, still look up to Chris Benoit or wish he would be in the Hall of Fame or wish he could be honored in some way. And they did bring up that whole Hall of Fame thing. And both her and Chris Jericho kind of laughed it off and said, you're out of your mind if you think that could even the possibility of that happening. And I'll still see people on, you know, YouTube or social media or whatever talking about how Chris Benoit one day should go in the Hall of Fame. You people are out of your fucking minds. He is not ever, ever in this or any lifetime going into the Hall of Fame, nor should he. So I just wish people would just let that go because it's comical. It is not going to happen. The idea that WWE could even entertain that idea without being raked over the coals is complete lunacy. Even if they wanted to for some reason, the head of the Chris Benoit fan club suddenly gains power in the offices of WWE, there is no way they could ever put that guy in the Hall of Fame. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that because they brought that up and they were kind of laughing it off. And I laugh it off just at the idea that there's anybody with of sane body and mind out there who would think that that would ever, ever happen. Just give it up. You can't ignore what happened. It's a terrible thing. I remember where I was when I heard the news. You know, people talk about, you know where you were when Kennedy was shot or when the Twin Towers came down. And on a wrestling level, find me something worse than the Benoit stuff. I mean, if we're going to make a list of the biggest tragedies, the biggest black marks in the wrestling industry, if we're being honest here, I think the number one thing would be steroids. You could say drugs and steroids, not you know, they kind of go hand in hand, but steroids probably chief among them. I think steroids have cost far more lives in wrestling than probably any promoter would like to admit, or any wrestler probably would like to admit. The body count is far higher when you open it up to steroid use in wrestling over the years. But in terms of just a singular incident, it's what happened with Benoit. I mean, there's absolutely nothing more horrific than that. You know, three people lost their lives, including, you know, two innocent people and a child. And the way it happened, the way the whole thing went down, it's horrendous. I was still at work. I was getting ready to leave. It was on a Monday. I had like a three-hour Raw that night. It was after 5:30 or something, and I had just before I left logged on to some wrestling website just to see if there was any news on Raw that night. And I saw the headline, and I just remember sitting there with my mouth open. I just was like, this can't be real. This can't be real. And I think I may have mentioned this before. My first thought, you know, it wasn't murder. It wasn't murder-suicide. My first thought, maybe it was my own way of trying to rationalize things because I didn't see this side of Chris Benoit, and he was the last person in the world I ever would have thought something like this would happen with. My first thought was like, wow, like, did they get wiped out by carbon monoxide poisoning? Because it's been known to happen. Carbon monoxide leaks in homes, you could wipe out an entire family. They call it the silent killer. I'm thinking, what a tragedy. Is that what happened here? My mind couldn't even process the thought that this was a murder-suicide. I'm sure a lot of people felt the same way. It's hard to believe it's been 9 years. It's just terrible. But to lighten things up a little bit here, there was another anniversary this week. On Thursday, was June 23rd. It marked 20 years since the birth of Austin 316 at the 1996 King of the Ring. That was the night that Austin won the crown. He cut that famous promo on Jake the Snake Roberts. It was the birth of Austin 316. I don't think that could be minimized. I did answer a mailbag question a week or two ago. Somebody asked me if that speech had never happened, would Austin be as big as he was? The answer is yes. He would have been every bit as big as he was. It might have taken a little bit longer, but he would have come up with some other catchphrase or some slogan or something. Austin was a talented enough guy, and that character, it resonated and it connected with people in a way that it wasn't one promo or one catchphrase that made his career. He was far too talented to say it was the catchphrase who made him who he was. It was part of who he was. It helped. But remember, you know, when he cut that promo, you would think, oh, this guy's off to the races. 2 months later at SummerSlam, he's wrestling Yokozuna in a two-minute match on the pre-show. And Yokozuna falls off the ropes and he pins him. That's what Steve Austin was doing 2 months after he won King of the Ring and cut that Austin 316 promo. It wasn't until the Survivor Series at the end of the year he had that match with Bret Hart because Bret agreed to work with him. Bret wanted to work with him. And he lost that match too. But that feud with Bret that then led to the rematch at WrestleMania 13, which it's amazing when I think back to this because, you know, we talk about Daniel Bryan and WWE not knowing or not caring what they've been handed, right? They've been handed this thing. This guy is connecting with the crowd in a way that nobody else has in so long. Let's run with that. Let's take advantage of it. And they had their plans, and their plan was not for Daniel Bryan to go to WrestleMania 30 and win the championship, but that's what ended up happening, and it was for the better. Even though he got hurt and he didn't have a very big run, still, that was the best possible storybook ending you could have had for WrestleMania 2 years ago. I think back to Steve Austin back then, and I think now to myself, this guy, he cuts that promo, he's clearly connecting with people on a level, you know, that few others are. The Ringmaster thing was a bust. This thing seems to be working. And again, he's wrestling Yokozuna on the pre-show at SummerSlam. He's wrestling Bret Hart, who's giving him some credibility. But then the big rematch of WrestleMania, that wasn't supposed to happen either. The plan for WrestleMania 13 was not Bret Hart against Steve Austin. The plan originally for WrestleMania 13 was Bret Hart against Shawn Michaels. And Shawn lost his smile, and he lost the championship, and shit happens. And so things got reconfigured, and it ended up that Bret Hart was going to wrestle Steve Austin. He didn't even know that it was going to be a submission match. He was at home, you know, nursing a knee injury, and he's watching this taped Raw with the updated voiceover saying it's going to be a submission match or an I Quit match or whatever it was. And a submission match, I think it was. And it just that's just how it worked out. But, you know, goddamn, it worked out for the better, I would say. How they luck into these things, it's pretty incredible. You know, that's why we can sit around saying, well, you know, there's no wrestling boom on the horizon, and you know, not like it was 20 years ago. I sure as hell don't see it. There's a lot to like about wrestling right now. There's a lot to like about what things that they're doing. I was just talking about the Cruiserweight Classic, and they're working with other promotions. That's really cool. NXT, you know, the NXT TakeOver shows. They only have a few of them each year. It's one of the best things about the WWE product are those TakeOver shows. So there's a lot to like about wrestling, but you look on the horizon, do you see that next big star, that next big breakout star, that next big boom? I don't see it. But this just goes to show you that you don't have to see it. Whenever there's been a boom in the past, I guarantee you nobody saw it coming. It's like Tony at the end of The Sopranos. He didn't see it coming. It just happens. By accident, sometimes. It just happens. A year from now, I could be sitting here doing a podcast talking about, you know, fucking Colin Cassidy, who's broken away from Enzo, and he's just taken off as a single star now, and they're doing a celebrity angle with him, and, you know, whoever it is, and all of a sudden, you know, Raw's ratings are going up, and the arenas are selling out. It happens. He just clicks. Or it could be somebody else on NXT that we're not even talking about right now. That's what's kind of cool about it. But Austin didn't really start to get that big, massive main event push for like almost a year. It took almost a year after that King of the Ring speech before he finally was on that main event level and he was wrestling Bret and he was wrestling, you know, guys like that. Not on the pre-show. So I think in the end he would have been fine, but that speech, that slogan, that whole Austin 316 catchphrase has sold more t-shirts than anyone in history. It made them a lot of money. It made him a very rich man, rich enough that he could retire in 2003 and not come back like a lot of other guys have. And And 20 years since Austin 316. Also, you know, on that same day, this has nothing to do with wrestling at all whatsoever, but I thought this was, I read this on one of the tech websites, and I thought it was kind of cool. June 23rd of this year marked 25 years, the 25-year anniversary of the birth of Sonic the Hedgehog. And it depresses me to know that there are some people listening to this podcast right now who are so young that either they don't know who Sonic the Hedgehog is, or they don't really see what the big deal is about Sonic the Hedgehog. But if you were a kid who grew up in the 80s, and you were into, you know, Super NES and Sega Genesis and all that stuff in the early 90s and the mid-90s, you know damn well who Sonic the Hedgehog is. When the original Sonic was released, I didn't have the Genesis. I was a Nintendo kid, so I had all the Mario games and Mario Kart and all that stuff. And I saw Sonic. I remember the artwork on the box for that first game. I still have it in my brain. I'm like, that's pretty fucking cool. And this guy's moving at like a million miles an hour. I'm like, I'm playing a game with this fucking, you know, Porky Plumber here who is not very fast. He's not very graceful. And I see Sonic the Hedgehog here, you know, turning into a ball and just zooming all over the screen. It was the coolest thing. And then eventually I got the Genesis and I got Sonic 1 and Sonic 2, and they got a little crazy with it after a while. You know, Sonic and Tails, and Sonic CD, and Sonic 3D, and so many other ones I can't even name them all. But yet now I could play Sonic the Hedgehog, the original one, on my freaking iPhone. It's pretty cool. So, anyway, I'm still a big Sonic fan. I guess since nobody bothered to ever email this to me, could do a buy or sell, Mario versus Sonic. I'd have to think about that one. I actually don't know the answer. I'd probably go with Mario, though. Mario, to me, I was always more of a Mario guy, as cool as I thought Sonic was. It's funny. Now that I mention that, I kind of want to go back and play those old games. I think I have the old consoles laying around somewhere. I just don't have the energy to dig them out. So that's one of those things that sounds good in theory. In practice, though, it's probably not going to happen. So anyway, happy birthday, Sonic the Hedgehog, 25 years ago. That's quite a jump there. We go from the single worst incident in wrestling history to one of the single greatest promos in wrestling history to a video game hedgehog. See, only on the sound off. Monday Night Raw this past week was live from Phoenix, Arizona. Raw Instapoll, 1,721 votes. 77% thumbs up, 23% thumbs down. Last week, I gave a plug to RawBreakdownProject.com. Has some great infographics up there that she works on once a week about Monday Night Raw. And I talked about how the women last week, they had less than 5 minutes of total airtime on this entire three-hour show. And that included matches, that included promos, flashbacks to SmackDown, everything. So I want to make sure I mention this here, that this week there was some improvement. That 5 minutes increased to over 15 minutes for the women here on this three-hour show. So, 15 is better than 5. I wanted to give them props for that. We also have the return of Sasha Banks, who has been missing for so long. And please don't, you know, tell me main event and superstars. I am aware of that. I'm half joking when people take things so seriously when you say, like, you do realize that Sasha Banks has been around, Solomonster. She really hasn't been. Yes, I'm aware. I'm aware. In fact, I was bored the other day. And I watched on their YouTube, I think it was on their YouTube channel, they had, maybe not, maybe it was pirated somewhere, but they had the Sasha Banks Summer Rae match that they had, I think it was a few weeks ago, a month ago, something like that. It's actually a long match. It went something like 15 minutes or something like that, and it actually was pretty good. You know, for as much as I'm happy to see Sasha back, it still bums me out that they never really gave Summer a chance as a wrestler. Because if you go back to those early NXT reviews when I started watching NXT, Summer was on the show. And the funny thing is, Sasha Banks was brand new on NXT. And she was this innocent little flower on the show. And I remember the segment where she was in the back. She was looking in the mirror in the locker room. And I think Summer came up from behind her. And Summer, it was almost like Summer was trying to corrupt her. And it worked. And that was the beginning of the Sasha Banks heel turn. And now it's kind of funny to see how everybody just talks about nothing but Sasha, and here's Summer, and she's kind of been forgotten about. But Summer was a pretty good wrestler. She would, you know, she got the long legs like Stacy Keibler used to have, and she would kind of use her legs to come up with some cool looking moves. And the thing I always liked about Summer Rae was she would trash talk and she would taunt, and she still does during her matches. Nobody else was really doing that, and she's very, very annoying when she does it, which is great because she's a heel. She's supposed to be. But as a wrestler, she wasn't an embarrassment or anything like that. I thought she was pretty good. So I thought, okay, when she gets called up, maybe she'll get even better. But she never really had a chance. You know, for whatever the reason, I guess they never saw that in her. But I look at Summer Rae and I say to myself, all right, I'm looking at the Bellas, I'm looking at, you know, some of these other women. I'm like, Sasha, it's not like Sasha's worse than them. You know what I mean? I mean, come on, give her a shot. So anyway, but Sasha did come back on Raw Monday night. They had the Natalya heel turn from the pay-per-view that they were following up on. Both of those things, I think, are positive things. Shakes things up a little bit. So I would call that a good week for the women. As far as the rest of the show, we had all three Shield guys out there in the opening segment. Fans were chanting, "You can't wrestle at Roman Reigns." They must have had ESP or something, because less than 24 hours later, and in fact, Roman Reigns cannot wrestle. He is not allowed to. At least for 30 days. But the whole "you can't wrestle" thing, it's not the first time they've chanted that at him. It's so fucking stupid. It is so fucking... You know, again, Roman Reigns, as compared to AJ Styles or Seth Rollins, fine. He is not the same wrestler that AJ Styles is. He is not the same wrestler that Seth Rollins is. Oh, by the way, Seth Rollins has been wrestling for, what, 15 years now? AJ Styles has been wrestling for, what, 20 years now? I wouldn't expect Roman Reigns to be the kind of wrestler those two guys are. I have seen far worse than Roman Reigns. Let me not remind you of how things used to be in WWE. If you go back 25 years, some of the guys they would push in those main events were just fucking embarrassing. Plodding around the ring, they could barely move, they could barely do anything. I think we've come a long way from those days. I think you look at a guy like Roman Reigns, you know, the guy can wrestle just fine. He's not a great wrestler, but he's good. He does just fine. He can hold his own in there no matter who he's in the ring with. The whole "you can't wrestle" thing is so fucking stupid. It is just so dumb. And by the way, you know, he's in the main event on this show, which we're going to talk about against Seth Rollins. I didn't hear any of those same numbskulls chanting "you can't wrestle" at him by the end of that match. If anything, I heard a "this is awesome" chant, which is another stupid chant that gets abused way too much. I mean, at least there's a time and a place for it, but talk about it. Talk about another chant that's just been beaten to death. Didn't hear any of the "you can't wrestle" nonsense at the end of that match. Maybe they all left. So Shane McMahon did book a main event on the show of Roman Reigns against Seth Rollins, with the winner getting the title shot against Dean Ambrose at Battleground. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, apparently they really are destined to feud forever, and I'm okay with that. They had a match. Zayn won with a victory roll. Owens attacked him after the match. They brawled all over the building. They had to be pulled apart backstage. We even got a Fit Finley cameo here as one of the agents. If I had to venture a guess, I would say this is going to end at Battleground, or maybe not end, but this is going to lead to a match at Battleground, either a Last Man Standing match or a Falls Count Anywhere match. I really hope it's Falls Count Anywhere. And I want them to actually take advantage of the Falls Count Anywhere stipulation and let these guys brawl all over the building, kind of like they did here. Okay, follow the Benoit Kevin Sullivan blueprint from the Great American Bash. Let them fight into the bathroom, like all over the building. Let them fight into the bathroom. Have some fun with it. You won't have Dusty Rhodes on commentary, unfortunately. He made that segment much better than it otherwise would have been. But these brawls in WWE now, man, I mean, they're just way too sanitized. They're way too sanitized. Al Snow and Big Boss Man, they fought outside the building, across the street, and into a bar. I'm not saying you have to go quite that far, but have some creativity with it. These guys are supposed to be mortal enemies. What was the subtitle of that "In Your House" when Shawn Michaels and Diesel had their mad "Good Friends, Better Enemies"? Okay, same thing here. Good friends, better enemies. They're going to do a gimmick match. Go all the way with it. Johnny Ace was the next old GM to return. First Teddy Long, now Johnny Ace, Big Johnny. He was lobbying for a job as a general manager on one of the shows. He mentioned People Power. Shane McMahon kicked him out. Enzo and Kaz, they squashed the Vaudevillains in 2 minutes, beat him with the rocket launcher, which is now being called Bada Boom Shakalaka. Having flashbacks to 20 years ago playing NBA Jam. Actually, 25 years ago. Man, old. Hopefully that name will get shortened to just Bada Boom, which I like that, actually. I like that name a lot better than Rocket Launcher, but Bada Boom Shakalaka, believe me, that ain't going to last very long. The Vaudevillains, I mean, you know, what can I say? They're exactly where I said they would end up. I want to talk just a little bit here about AJ Styles, the club, John Cena. There's a big promo segment here. AJ was seemingly not happy. I'm watching this thinking this guy's full of shit, but he was seemingly very unhappy that the club got involved in his match with John Cena at Money in the Bank. He called them out. He had each one of them apologize to him. He said, you're going to apologize to John Cena as well. He called out Cena. This whole thing turned out to, in my view anyway, this all turned out to be a ruse to get Cena to come out. It did lead to a match between Cena and Carl Anderson that only went about a minute and a half. Cena absolutely destroyed this guy. He made him look like a jabron. I didn't like that at all. I know Cena was kind of motivated by the loss the night before. I'm not saying he shouldn't have come out and taken most of it and been like a house of fire, but Carl Anderson, I mean, you could have put fucking, Gilbert in there. It wouldn't have made a difference. It just made Anderson look like just a nothing. And he had the match won. He had him beat in 2 minutes with the attitude adjustment, but before the ref could count three, the club ran in. They beat down John Cena. He got laid out by a Styles Clash. And obviously this is going to lead to a rematch between them at Battleground. We have Paige and Charlotte for the women's title. Some rare continuity on this show since Paige pinned Charlotte the week before. Dana Brooke kind of messed up the finish here. She was supposed to take Charlotte's foot and place it on the bottom rope. And the referee was not supposed to see that. And then the referee would see, oh, her foot's on the rope, and break up the fall. Instead, I don't know. I don't know what happened here. Dana was trying to put it on the rope, and it wasn't working. And the referee looks over, and he sees Dana Brooke clearly interfering in the match. And it was a cluster. The finish here was a cluster. Charlotte off the distraction did hit natural selection. She got the pin. They were beating her down after the match. Sasha Banks comes out to one of the biggest pops on the entire show, and she makes short work of Dana Brooke. Dana Brooke comes running at her, and she just nails her with a forearm, gets in the ring. Charlotte goes to run away. She hits part of the bank statement, not the full bank statement, picks up the title to pose with it, and she gets attacked, and Paige comes back. Anyway, short story here is that Paige and Sasha Banks were left standing. Sasha was posing with the title. She looks quite good with it, and I have no doubt that by SummerSlam, she will have that title. I did see that Paige VanZant came out. She is apparently going to be fighting next month for UFC, and so she has passed on WWE's offer to do something at SummerSlam. She did a whole interview on ESPN. She says she's a big WWE fan. She absolutely wants to do something down the road, but right now she's focused on fighting and her next fight, so she will not be at SummerSlam. That's too bad. I did like my idea of her being in Sasha's corner to kind of counter Dana Brooke. And have that big shot of her posing with Sasha in the championship at the end of the match. I don't know what other woman, like a celebrity figure, they could put in that same spot. I was trying to think about that. As far as fighters, other than Ronda Rousey, there is really no other female fighter that has like a huge promo that would be realistic. So you're not going to get Misha Tate, I don't think, to be at SummerSlam. I guess Holly Holm, maybe. I don't know. I don't know that that's going to really mean as much. What's Danica Patrick doing these days? She's still a big figure, right? A big female celebrity sports figure. Maybe she's not as popular as she was a few years ago. I used to see Danica Patrick mentioned all over the place. I barely see her mentioned now, but she's still a big name. Maybe they can get her to come in and do something. That'll definitely get them on SportsCenter. I mean, let's be honest, that's really all they want. They bring in a female athlete of some kind. It's to get that money shot so it gets on ESPN. The Wyatt family is back without Luke Harper. which makes me very sad because he was probably the best thing about the Wyatt family after Bray. He's still out until, I think he said September, October is around the time that he should be able to come back. So they were interrupted by the New Day, which looks to be the next feud. Xavier Woods at one point looked like he was just mesmerized. He was staring at Bray, and Bray was staring at him, and Kofi was talking, and Big E was talking, and Xavier just had this concerned look on his face. He was silent. He was just staring at the Wyatts. I don't know if he was hypnotized or what the deal was, but finally he snapped out of it. I think this could be cool. The whole positivity versus darkness thing, and it could be cool as long as it's not played up for total comedy. That's really all the New Day has done so far. It's always comedy with them. Comedy all the time. With the Wyatt family, you can't make this comedy all the time. You've got to kind of find that fine line between it. So if they play their cards right here, I think this could be interesting. And I also don't see this as being anything more than something for the New Day to do for the next pay-per-view until they can get to SummerSlam. And whoever it is that they wrestle at SummerSlam, I think that may be where they drop the belt. It's going to be a year. SummerSlam will be exactly 1 year since they won them. I would have to think that they're coming to the end of their reign very soon. It's just a matter of who. You know, do they put over Anderson and Gallows? Is there, you know, Kaz and Enzo? Are they going to put the belts on them already? Are they going to bring up another team from NXT? I don't know. But I don't see them losing them to the Wyatt family. I hope not. We got another Darren Young, Bob Backlund segment. I am so done with these. I have done a 180. If you listen to this podcast like a month ago when these started, or it feels like 5 years ago when these started, I was so happy. I was so happy to see Bob Backlund back on TV. I was all gung-ho. I said, you can't go wrong having Bob Backlund on TV each week. Boy, was I wrong. And I'm not even blaming Bob Backlund. It's not even his fault. They have killed this for me. It's so lazy to just put them in a studio, because you know that's what happened here. They got them in a studio, the same studio. One day, they taped all of these segments in one day so they could just spit them out over the next 6 weeks or 6 months or whatever. I mean, this thing had comedy potential. And you know, you have the two of them together, like in the same place, on screen, together at the same time, not a freaking split screen. And they're, whatever they're doing. I mean, God only knows what you could have them doing. And Backlund just being Backlund and being a madman. And put them in different locations, put them on the street, whatever, or show him training Darren Young. It's so lazy. It's just lazy what they're doing with this. And I just can't wait for it to end. Rusev and Titus O'Neil, that issue is not over yet. Titus was very pissed off at Rusev for what he said to his kids who were ringside when Rusev beat him at the pay-per-view. He was mocking their father. Actually, Rusev is so great. Now, I've said this before, that I am a big Rusev fan. And one of the best things to do is to follow Rusev on Twitter. Because after the pay-per-view, he posted a tweet that said he beat Titus O'Neil so badly at Money in the Bank that his kids don't even call him dad anymore. They call him Titus. I just was like, I fucking love this guy. He's so great. He is so great. And I even saw him and Lana on SportsCenter. And I never bother watching these Jonathan Coachman SportsCenter interviews that they've been doing, but I watched that one, and again, it was very entertaining. And you know what was really entertaining about that? I love Lana. Lana was smoking on this show. She looked unbelievable. But the problem with Lana, and it's kind of funny, but it's also a little embarrassing, is that she will slip in and out of that accent so much, like in the middle of a promo from one sentence to the next sometimes. She will slip from, like, normal, what's her name, CJ Perry, right? CJ Perry to Lana in the same promo from one sentence to the next. And in this ESPN interview, she was slipping in and out of that accent like, it was like, I couldn't even pay attention to what was going on. I was just so focused on, like, is she supposed to be Russian here? Is she supposed, you know, like, I don't watch Total Divas, but I will admit I'm very curious once they start airing the next season of Total Divas with her, and I'm sure Rusev will be on there, if she's just CJ or if she's Lana. Because I guarantee you she's going to be slipping in and out of that accent on that show. So that's something that I have to assume she's not doing that on purpose. You know, she should probably just pick one or the other. But Rusev is great. Titus O'Neil showed some real fire here. He was all pissed off backstage. He said, you know, you don't talk about my family. And he came out and, you know, they had a pull-apart brawl. This was the first time I really paid attention to the way that Titus walks to the ring. I don't know if anybody else noticed this, but it looks painful. It's painful to watch him walk to the ring. I mean, I know he played football before he wrestled. I mean, he just must have destroyed his knees, because he looks like Kali when he walks down to the ring. Main event was Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns in a Money in the Bank rematch. Really good match. Ambrose was at ringside doing commentary. They went to a double countout. Shane McMahon came out and said that at the pay-per-view, it's going to be a triple threat match with Rollins, Reigns, and Ambrose for the championship. Ambrose then laid out Roman Reigns with dirty deeds. He laid out Seth Rollins with dirty deeds. And that was the end of the show. So, like I said earlier, I am a proponent of keeping that match as it is, of leaving Reigns in there and just having him eat the pinfall. And also, you know, this week, one thing they have to do is they have to acknowledge on TV why Roman Reigns is not on TV. They have to acknowledge the fact that he was suspended. It's all over it was the top story on WWE.com. It was all over their social media. I'm not subscribed to the SMS alerts on my phone whenever there's big breaking news from WWE because I don't want them annoying me with it. But if you have the alerts, I mean, you could tell me, it wouldn't even shock me if they sent a breaking news text out to everybody saying Roman Reigns suspended for 30 days. So it's not like people don't know. It's not like only, you know, quote unquote internet fans are actually on the internet here. You know, they're kind of hardcore mainstream fans who, probably don't listen to this podcast. They go to the website. They go on WWE's Twitter. God knows they promote it all the time, every week, every minute on their shows. It's not like they ignored the suspension. So they have to acknowledge it on TV. It's just weird. It's just weird to not have him on TV for 3 weeks and just pretend like he doesn't exist and then have him come back for the pay-per-view. Just be honest for once. You know, like the Lawler thing. Jerry Lawler got suspended. They replaced him with David Otunga on SmackDown last week, which, by the way, probably answers that question after we talked about that last week. And no acknowledgement at all of Lawler. I didn't expect them to. They didn't have to, especially given, you know, the nature of what happened there. So that I get. You can get away with just not mentioning it at all. You know, and just don't even bring up Lawler's name. But in this case, this is your top guy. And he's in the main event of the next pay-per-view. You got to just be honest. Just level with people. Just say what happened and move on. So they at least should do that on TV this week. It's not like it's some big secret. Really quickly, I did watch the AJ Styles podcast with Steve Austin. I liked it. I thought it was really good. If you haven't seen it, I would take the time to watch it. I think it's worth it. Yeah, he talks a lot about his upbringing and his time in TNA. They didn't shy away from it, although it was kind of funny because the first time I think Austin brought it up, it was almost like there was like a nervousness there about even mentioning TNA. But then once they did, you know, AJ talked about Dixie Carter, and I'm sitting there thinking, man, I'm watching Stone Cold Steve Austin interview AJ Styles, which is already a weird thing. Like 10 years ago, the idea of Steve Austin doing a podcast and interviewing anybody would have been just so far from reality. But here he is on WWE's own network interviewing AJ Styles, and they're having a conversation about Dixie Carter and what she pays people. And AJ did mention that. He's like, you know, I'm a big believer in that you are paid what you're worth. And so he basically confirmed it was a money issue. That's why he left. They wanted to cut his pay. He wasn't going to stand for it. He took a chance on himself that he could leave and end up doing well somewhere else. And that's when he didn't mention the ROH New Japan deal, but that's where he went. And became a much bigger star, in my opinion, than he ever was in TNA. I think it worked out pretty well for him. But he came off as just brutally honest, very likable, and it almost makes you wonder, what if? You know, what if he would have come to the company 10 years ago? What if he would have taken that developmental deal in 2002 or 2004 or whatever it was to come over? He addressed that also in the interview. He mentions that, and he mentions that it was his wife. She was in school, and she couldn't do that to her. Even though she was fully supportive, he was like, I'm not going to do that. I politely declined their offer. And he acknowledged that it was probably the best movie ever made. You know, things happen for a reason, that sort of thing. It was interesting stuff. So if you didn't see it, I give it a thumbs up. I still think the Big Show interview that Austin did was probably the best podcast with him, you know, that Austin has done on the network of all of them. The Styles one, though, would be pretty high up there, too.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT is kind of a boring show this week. Lucha Underground, too. Not their best week. The former Biff Busick, who debuted under his real name as Chris Gerard many months ago, he now has a new name. And the only good thing I can say about it is that it's unique enough that you will not forget it, because you'll be too busy laughing at it. His name is now Oney Lorcan. Oney Lorcan. They could easily fix this. All they have to do is put the letter M in front of his first name, give him a hot valet, and all of a sudden he's like a new man. But that's not really his character. I don't know what he is. He's very weird. Maybe it makes sense. A weird name for a weird guy. But I would not have given him that name. He did win, though. He beat Ty Dillinger. Austin Aries was backstage. He was cutting a promo when he was interrupted by No Way Jose, who told him to be more positive. This would later prove to be a mistake. Jose came out. He beat a guy named Josh Woods, who was out there dressed up like an MMA fighter. Apparently, MMA fighters are no match for No Way Jose. If Brock beats Mark Hunt next month, I want him in the octagon with No Way Jose next. That's what I want. After he won, out comes Austin Aries, who thanks Jose for reminding him that sometimes you just need to have some fun. Aries then started dancing badly. They danced all over ringside, and you were just waiting for it. The whole time, you know it's coming. You're just waiting and waiting for it. They milked it as long as they could. They end up on top of the announce desk in front of Tom Phillips and Corey Graves, and they're dancing up there, and Aries is like, hey, do a twirl. Go ahead, do a twirl. And as soon as Jose turns his back, Aries waffles him with a forearm, knocks him off the announce desk, and just beats the crap out of him, puts him in the last chancery on the ramp, which looked like it sucked for both of them, because Aries' head is like pressing down on the metal grate, and that can't feel too good. So after dancing around it for a while, and then literally dancing around here on the show, Aries is now a full-fledged heel, which is the role that, frankly, he was born to play. Now we just got to get Bobby Roode in on this fun and get the Dirty Heels reunited. They were one of my favorite acts in TNA. Them and Joe Park. I miss Joseph Park. I wonder what he's up to these days. But anyway, I want to see Aries and Roode put together here. Actually, I want to see them together on the main roster, challenging New Day. But I would settle for NXT. William Regal announced that Finn Balor against Shinsuke Nakamura is going to take place in 3 weeks on NXT, not in Brooklyn. And so that would be the July 13th show, which is the same night that the Cruiserweight Classic debuts. Very smart. Very smart on them to coordinate things that way. Big main event leads right into the new show. It also means that that match is going to air 6 days before the draft. And so my guess is that it's being done that way on purpose. And again, I haven't read any spoilers. I don't even want to go into any of that stuff. So without knowing what happened, because I think they just taped the Balor-Nakamura match last night. Without knowing what happened, my guess here is that they know Balor is getting called up. I mean, it's just an inevitability at this point. And the draft just makes it that much more likely. So he's going to lose, would be my guess, because they're not going to beat Nakamura. I mean, Nakamura is still undefeated. If he's getting the title shot next, you don't have him lose and then get a title shot. So he beats Balor, and in fact, we do get what I think is the biggest possible main event you could do for the Brooklyn show in August, which is Nakamura against Samoa Joe for the championship. And I think that would be the match to make, and I think that's the match that they are going to make. Bayley returned. This is her first match back in over a month after her worked knee injury. She beat Deonna Purrazzo. Bayley comes across as the biggest star in all of NXT. And someone wrote into me asking about the chances of Bayley against Asuka actually headlining TakeOver in Brooklyn, assuming that it's Bayley against Asuka. I think the Brooklyn crowd would accept that match if it were any other show. You know, most of the time they would accept it, but not this time. Because if you've got Joe and Nakamura for the championship on that show, then that is the main event. There is no match. I don't care if Bayley's involved or not. There is no bigger match you could do than that. And so you can't have the women headlining that show. As long as that other match is on the card, that is the match that will end the show, as it should. Bayley's going to have to settle for second best that night. They set up Carmella against Alexa Bliss for next week. I'm thinking about this. You know, they really are playing up this whole story of Carmella. I'm going to be the women's champion. It's my dream. It's my goal. My boys are on Raw and they're doing well, but I had to stay behind and I'm going to win the title. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, when would they even do that match? Unless she, like, turns heel. Like, let's say Bayley gets the belt back, which she probably shouldn't. She should be on the main roster. But even if Bayley were to get the belt back and then Carmella comes out to celebrate, oh, I'm so happy for you, and then boom, she turns on her, you know, kicks her in the crotch or something. I don't know. I guess that wouldn't have any effect on her. But actually, it probably would have an effect. Put a little spike on the end of the boot. Like, I noticed Xavier, is it Xavier Woods? I think Xavier Woods, he wears like these Iron Sheik boots. I would imagine, you know, male or female, you kick somebody in the crotch with that, it's going to hurt. So even if they did that, I don't know. I mean, Carmella against Asuka, none of this seems to make any sense. Unless they're going to take all four of them and put them in a four-way at the Brooklyn show. And so you have Bayley, you have Asuka, you have Alexa Bliss, and you have Carmella. That I could see them doing. But you could do a disputed finish between Alexa and Carmella next week, and then that sets up the match. I guess we'll see what they do. Nia Jax made short work of Liv Morgan, and Shinsuke Nakamura did the same thing in the main event with Buddy Murphy. I can't believe, after calling this guy Murphy for so long, they went back to that terrible Buddy Murphy name. It's like if I had a dog, I would name it Buddy Murphy. Actually, I wouldn't, because the name still sucks, but I'm debating which name I would rather have, Buddy Murphy or Oney Lorcan. There's a buy or sell for you. Actually, if I merge the two, I can call myself Murphy Lorcan. That actually doesn't sound so bad. So anyway, pretty much a nothing show, aside from Ailey's. I'm thinking of Failey Breaks. I was playing a game on my phone. I don't have too many of them, but there's this game called Failey Breaks that my friend told me about. It's actually a lot of fun. Just FYI, if you're in the App Store looking for any fun games to kill some time. So I think that's why I'm thinking Failey, Ailey, Austin Aries. I guess when he's hurt, you call him Austin Aries. There's some bad humor here. Aside from Aries killing No Way Jose, which was fun, and I guess the announcement of Balor and Nakamura, this was a nothing show. There really wasn't a whole lot going on here. TNA. I want to just mention this. Somebody sent me a link to Vince Russo's podcast. Now, normally when that happens, I completely disregard it because I have better things to spend my time doing. But they said, you should really listen. It's an interesting interview. He has Magnus on, and Magnus has some potentially explosive things to say about TNA. So I listened. I listened to it. By the end, I was almost comatose from all the bros. I was completely broed out when the interview was over. But I was listening to Magnus, and I thought Magnus came across well. Like, he wasn't making shit up. I mean, what reason would he even have to make shit up and burn bridges? He was being honest about his time in TNA and, you know, when they made him the champion and working with Sting. If you remember, Sting put Magnus over. I mean, not only did he put him over, he tapped out to Magnus. And, you know, that's just not something that somebody like Sting would go ahead and do unless he thought, okay, this guy is the next generation or this guy's got a lot of potential. And he was kind of sharing some backstage stories about what went into that and Sting going and kind of turning to John Gamburic and Dixie and saying, you know, make sure that you don't waste this. Like, I don't do this very often, so make sure that if I'm putting this guy over this way, you make sure that it means something. And of course, in the end, it meant nothing. But the one story that he told, I guess this was probably the most controversial thing, and it doesn't surprise me. It really doesn't surprise me. If you remember, I did a podcast many years ago. It was episode 156 of The Sound Off. If I had to make a list of like the top 10 best sound offs or the 10 most memorable sound offs, this would absolutely be on the list. I went on this rant, and it stemmed from a story that appeared on Cage Side Seats. It was a pretty in-depth story, too. And it was about TNA's appalling treatment of the Knockouts. So this was many years ago. And it stemmed from the Daphne lawsuit or deposition and stuff that she had talked about, management saying to her and the abuse that she took and when she got hurt and how they treated her. And it wasn't just her. It was other Knockouts as well. There were a lot of stories back then that they weren't even being paid well. A lot of them were working mall kiosks at like Sunglass Hut as their other job because they couldn't just get by on what TNA was paying them. Just a lot of just other awful things. But the Daphne story in particular was just completely egregious. Now, John Gamburic, who came from WWE, he was Big John. Remember the original season of Tough Enough? I always called him Mini Vader. He looked like Vader. Always came across as like this nice, affable, lovable guy, right? That's how he came across on the show. He worked in production. He was working right underneath Kevin Dunn for many, many years. And then he left. I don't remember if he got fired. I think he left. And he took a job several years ago with TNA. And he didn't just take a job with TNA working in production, which you would think, okay, that would probably be this guy's forte. They made him the head of creative, I think, or the head of talent related. I mean, they put him in these roles that you would think, this guy doesn't have any experience. What are they doing here? Why? Because he worked for WWE? You think he's the jack of all trades? So John Gamburic has been kind of at the helm, I guess, right under Dixie in TNA now for a few years. And you don't hear a lot of very positive stories about John Gamburic. And this one, to me, takes the cake. So Magnus is talking about when he won the championship from Jeff Hardy. They put the title on Magnus. I remember watching that match, in fact. I remember there was a ladder. I'm trying to remember this now. I think the stipulation for the match was that the title was not, it wasn't hanging in the ring. I think it was hanging over the stage, like at the head of the aisleway. So you'd have to crawl up the ramp, and there was a ladder, and that's where the ladder was positioned. It was kind of weird. And I think Jeff Hardy took like this real sick bump. He got knocked off the ladder. What else is new? And Magnus pulled the belt down, and now he's the champ. And they're going to run with Magnus as their hot young guy who's going to be the next big thing here for the company. Kind of like what EC3 eventually did become for them. Magnus says that he got hurt in the match, and he knew he got hurt. And he said something to Jeff. I don't know if I can continue. And Jeff's like, all right, don't worry, I got you here. Somewhere in the match, he got a concussion. He hit his head. He knew he was hurt. He knew he was concussed. He wasn't all there. When he went backstage, I guess he mentioned Scott D'Amore, who I think now runs Border City Wrestling. He was, he had a big role in the early days of TNA. Yeah, pretty well-respected guy, well-liked guy. I guess he was Magnus's business agent at the time, and he knew Magnus was winning the championship. And so he made sure he was there for it. He was in the back. And as Magnus tells the story, as soon as he comes through the back, like Scott D'Amore takes one look at him and he knows, like, okay, dude, sit down. Like, you're not all here. There's something very wrong. So John Gamburic comes over, I guess, once he gets wind of the fact that Magnus thinks he has a concussion. And he comes over to Magnus, and without just coming right out and flat out saying what it is that he wants to say, he basically says, we may need to take the title off of you. Like, I may need you to work at the tapings tomorrow night, and we may do something with EC3. And Magnus takes this something with EC3 to mean, like, are you going to take the belt off me? Like, I just won the title here, and because I got hurt, you're gonna take it right off me the next night? Because, I guess if the guy's hurt, I could see where TNA, their plans, they're going to tape TV now for however many weeks. You know TNA. I mean, they tape TV 6 months in advance. And I could see where, okay, a major injury would potentially screw things up for the company. So I get that. But basically, the short of it is that Gamburic wanted him to work with the concussion, knowing full well that this guy got knocked loopy and suffered a concussion. And it's not like this happened 5 years ago or 10 years ago. You can claim, well, we didn't know that the seriousness of concussions and all this. I mean, give me a break. The guy wanted Magnus. It was so important to have Magnus work, even though he was clearly hurt. He didn't seem to give a shit. And I find that appalling. I find that appalling that he would even say something like that to Magnus. You got to listen to the interview if you can stomach it. You've got to listen to the interview and just hear it in his own words. I'm paraphrasing here. But I wasn't shocked. And it goes back to episode 156 of The Sound Off when I talked about the treatment of the knockouts and that whole story from all those years ago. This has been their MO. And John Gaborik wasn't even working for TNA back then, but it's this culture, apparently, in TNA where they really don't come off very well and they don't really seem to give a damn. And Magnus, you could tell, I mean, he was dropping F-bombs. Like, he was, as he told the story, he was pissed. And look, he has every right to be pissed. I'd be pissed, too, if somebody said that to me. If my boss told me that, I'd tell him to go piss off. So, if you want to listen to it, it is a good interview, at least in terms of the stuff that Magnus shares. Or at least find a transcript of it if you don't want to listen to it. But it's on, it was part two. I guess Russo did two parts with him. This was part two. Of I guess it's the brand or whatever it is that he calls it. So you should check it out. Ring of Honor. Roderick Strong announced his departure from Ring of Honor. Mr. ROH is now going to have to be Mr. Something Else. He's been there since 2003. He may be the longest tenured guy in the entire company. I don't know too many guys from 2003 who were still left in Ring of Honor. And he said that he's leaving, quote, to pursue other opportunities. End quote. So I read that as NXT. Especially, you know, you got the draft coming up. NXT, you know NXT is going to be gutted. I mean, they're going to take guys from NXT left and right. They're going to need some new guys. They're going to need some guys that have a profile. Roddy has a name. I don't see him on the main roster. I don't see him being on the main roster. But I think he'd fit well right there in NXT. Yeah, just like a Bobby Roode or anybody like that. I think he would fit in very well. And he could probably be relied on to have great matches. Yeah, I don't know of him as being this great entertaining promo or anything, but I admit I'm not like a huge Roderick Strong fan that I've seen every match and every promo. He may be better at that kind of stuff now, but as a wrestler, he's second to none. So if you need him to get in there and have a great match and put on a great show, he's as good as anybody you'll find. So I think in NXT, he'd fit in very well. It also looks like Moose is on his way out after his contract expires at the end of August. WWE, it's been said, has had interest in him for a long time. He was spotted backstage visiting friends at the last NXT TakeOver show. Not really allowed to have a conversation with him about his contract. That would be considered tampering, but I would imagine that somebody probably said something to him. Or he probably stepped into a room briefly with Triple H or someone at some point while he was there. So it looks like he is on his way out of ROH. I have no doubt that if he leaves, he will absolutely end up in NXT in the next few months. And from what I've seen of him, and I have not seen much of ROH television lately, I know, I apologize. When I watched it before, I always enjoyed the show. It's just, I don't know, I just haven't been able to keep up with it. But from what I've seen of him, and I saw a lot of Moose when I was watching ROH, you know, consistently. And even some of the shows, like I went to Final Battle, was it last year or the year before? And he was there, and he's improved. He's gotten better, and it's not like he's had that many years, you know, training to be a wrestler. I think he's actually improved quite a bit. He has a really fun chant, which is half the battle. Once you come to WWE, if you've got a really catchy catchphrase or a fun chant or something, you've already got a leg up on everybody else. And maybe the most important thing for him, he's big. So I think he'll do very well. Lucha Underground. They have a new luchador named Nightclaw. I wanted to know who he was. He has this jaguar mask. I thought it was like a puma, but they already have a Prince Puma. It's a jaguar. Very unique. So I went online. I'm like, who is this guy? The first thing I learned, and I wasn't aware of this, is that Brian Cage went by the name of Nightclaw many years ago when he was briefly in WWE. I thought to myself, wait a minute, is this some kind of gimmick they're running now where you know, Cage got beaten by Matanza and he's going to try to get back the Gift of the Gods title. So now he's under a mask and calling himself Nightclaw. But if you look at Nightclaw, Nightclaw don't look like Brian Cage. I'm like, it can't be him. This Nightclaw is played by a former AAA star named Flamita, who wears, as I said, a jaguar mask. He's part of the Jaguar tribe, according to Dario Cueto. I say former AAA star because it appears that he has since this was taped, he has departed AAA, which may not bode well for his future here on this show. We may not be seeing very much of Nightclaw after this season. But Dario gave him one of the ancient Aztec medallions. He didn't have to fight for it. I guess he's a big enough star. He just gave him one. And I guess as a signing bonus, he said. And he will debut as part of the Gift of the Gods match at Ultima Lucha Dos. We had Daga beating Mascarita Sagrada by tap out. Famous B was not very happy about the little guy coming up short again. And he viciously attacked him. After the match, he beat him down with his shoe. I mean, you talk about the ultimate embarrassment. If you're going to beat somebody down, that's one thing. But in a lot of cultures, you beat somebody down with a shoe, it doesn't get any lower than that. So I will give Famous B this piece of advice. Maybe I should call his phone number and see if I can leave him a message. Might I suggest someone taller than 4'5" next time if you want to actually, win matches? Just a little piece of advice. Joey Ryan, Cortez Castro, and Mr. Cisco against Marty the Moth, Killshot, and Sinestro de la Muerte. 3 medallions up for grabs here for the winning team in this match. Since Marty had to be partners with Killshot, he gave him back his dog tags before the match. And what was funny about it is their team won. So they got the medallions, and as soon as the match was over, he stole the dog tags right back. He's such a prick. Sexy Star and Mariposa, reluctant partners against Taya and Ivelisse. Also, 2 ancient Aztec medallions up for grabs for the winners. Mariposa and Sexy Star got the win here. The closing segment of the show was Prince Puma getting mic time in the ring for the first time ever. I mean, we've seen some segments recently, this season, for the first time of Puma speaking, but we've never seen Puma get into the ring, grab a microphone like, the first 20 minutes of Raw, and cut a promo. So this was a big deal. So there he is. He talks about how he's idolized Rey Mysterio, and now he's got to know if he's better. He's got to know if he can beat the icon that is Rey Mysterio. So Rey comes out. He says Prince Puma is still a prince. I am a king. He too needs to know if he can hang with the guy who hopes to one day replace him. And they shake hands, and they made it official for Ultima Lucha. So, very simple setup. I want to prove that I'm better than you, and I want to prove to myself that I can still hang and that I'm the best. It's very easy to follow. And I think the match itself is going to be outstanding. So, that was Lucha Underground. Like I said, I mean, they forwarded, their storylines and stuff. It wasn't a bad show, but it wasn't as fun as these episodes usually are. It was just kind of like, okay, we got through the hour, we moved some stories along. Other than that, really wasn't much to see. So let's get to your questions, since we're running along here. Let's get to the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Preston on Twitter, he didn't email this to me, but it was something I wanted to bring up here. He wanted to know my thoughts on what Freddie Prinze Jr. said about John Cena on Sam Roberts' podcast. Freddie is an actor, as many of you know. He became a writer for a while for WWE. I think he left and then came back, and then he left again. So he was on Sam's podcast. He told a story about convincing Vince McMahon one day to replace his traditional promo classes with an acting workshop. He's like, let me run an acting workshop. And Vince agreed to it. And he's telling this story, and he's talking about how John Cena would constantly interrupt it. And he told Freddie, you either have it or you don't. These guys either have it or they don't. Basically just being a dick about it. And then much later on, I guess one of the guys that went through one of the workshops must have cut a promo on TV that really impressed Cena, because he complimented Freddie on it. He's told a version of this story before, Freddie Prinze Jr., not the part about Cena interrupting the acting classes. That I didn't know that. But about Cena being a dick to him and calling him Ashton Kutcher his first few months on the job. And then finally, after, I guess, again, one of his guys cut a great promo, Cena told him, you know, good job or something like that. I'd heard that version of the story before. To me, it comes off as Cena just ribbing the new guy. Although interrupting his classes where guys are trying to learn and get better and just telling him, you know, you either have it or you don't, that just sounds like a dick move on his part. I don't even think that's true. I mean, I'll use Bret Hart as an example, okay? Bret Hart was pretty bad. I mean, you can go back and, I mean, you can pretty much go back on the network, forget YouTube, and just bring up old Hart Foundation promos and stuff. Bret Hart was pretty bad on promos when he first started out. And there's a lot of people out there who would argue that Bret Hart was always a bad promo. They don't like Bret Hart, or they thought his promo sucked, and you know, they're entitled to their opinion. I happen to think that Bret Hart became a freaking awesome promo. He didn't cut the same kind of promo that, like, Shawn Michaels cut. It was a different type of interview. But I thought Bret, if you look at him and a lot of those, like, anti-America Hart Foundation promos in 1997, I mean, he was doing some of his best work that year. He had his own style about him. He had his own, like a, it was a Bret promo, but he became a very good promo guy. Like when he was, yeah, and when he was motivated, he was great. I mean, the El Dandy promo in WCW is still as good now as it was then. It's just, he could do comedy too, apparently. But when he first started out, I mean, Bret was pretty bad. I mean, he was so nervous he had to wear glasses because his eyes would keep darting around the room. But again, he gradually got better. He got better over time with experience. So this whole notion of either have it or you don't, judging by that criteria, if a guy like Bret Hart started out in the mid-80s and he sucked on promos, that would have been the end. You know, on to the next one. He doesn't have it. He doesn't have the charisma. But he does. So I don't buy that. I mean, look, I find stories like the one JTG told in his book far more appalling than this when it comes to Cena. I mean, that was the story with the glasses. I'm not going to retell it again, but that and the Alex Riley stuff, you know, guys like JTG and Freddie Prinze Jr., I think they have better things to do than make up stories about John Cena. I don't think they're lying. I don't think they have an axe to grind. It doesn't paint Cena in the best light. You know, I remember speaking to someone in WWE, not a wrestler, who said on their first day, or it was one of their first days in the job, they're backstage, and Cena just comes right up to him. They've never met him before. And he just starts grilling this person with questions. Just like, you know, what do you have to offer? What do you bring to the table? How do you make this company better? Cena seems like he genuinely cares about the company. I can see why they value him so much, besides all the merch that he sells. But then you hear stories like this or the Nexus stuff, and you just shake your head. You know, thank God, and this was more of a Vince call than a Cena call, but it sure didn't look like Cena protested it when they wanted Cena to beat the Shield at the Elimination Chamber. I think it was Rollins. Rollins, Reigns, and Ambrose against Cena, Ryback, and Sheamus. This was only a few months after the Shield debuted. Like 3 months, maybe? 4 months? And the Shield guy said no. They banded together, they went to Vince, and they said no, we're not losing to John Cena. Ambrose, I think Dean Ambrose, I remember him talking about this on Chris Jericho's podcast. He said they took a stand and they said, no, Cena's not beating us. We've got too much momentum. And once he beats us, we're like everybody else that John Cena beats. Thank God those three guys took a stand. And look at where they are now. If Cena beats them, they lose their... It could have been anybody. It didn't just have to be Cena. But if you beat them in that match and you end their streak and you kill their momentum, who the hell knows what happens? It was way too early to do that. I mean, maybe they're good enough that they still end up on top. You know, Roman, I'm sure, would have. But I also think back to that Nexus match at SummerSlam, and I think, where are those guys right now? Where's Wade Barrett right now? But yeah, to be fair to Cena, he did admit to Jericho and Edge after that SummerSlam match that it was a mistake for him to go over those guys the way that he did. And even here, you know, Freddie Prinze did say it took a while, but he seemed to have gained Cena's respect. So maybe it's just a judgment thing on Cena's part. Maybe Cena has good intentions, but he doesn't have the best judgment when it comes to this stuff. It's hard to say. Look, I'm sure he plays politics like every other top guy has over the years. Does he do it any more or less than they did? If anything, I would think he probably does it less. I don't remember any of the writers that have worked with Cena talking about handing him a script and him asking the guy, am I fucking going over? One of the all-time great stories, by the way. I love that Triple H story. You know, I don't know that Cena's as blatant as that, but I would guess that he is no different than any of those guys who are looking to protect their spot. Ricardo from Orlando. It's not that Money in the Bank was a bad show, but one thing that brought it down was the crowd. They just didn't seem into it, aside from Ambrose cashing in. Well, your audio must have cut out because I could have sworn the crowd was going apeshit during that John Cena-AJ Styles match. You might want to go back and check that out. Take the TV off mute. He says, what makes it worse is that I was watching some old Raw back from 1999 and then Money in the Bank. I noticed that back in the day, the crowds were crazy. They popped for everything and everyone. What could make the crowds more lively and a bit more like those fans in the UK? I suggest giving them beer before the show or planting hype men in the crowd. Planting anything in the crowd is a terrible idea, as is giving people beer. Have you not been to a sporting event? It's very simple. Wrestling, and I'm not trying to be a dick, I'm just being funny. Some people get all bent out of shape when I make comments like that. But here's the thing. Wrestling was hot back then, and now it's not. That's it. And also, they go to the UK to tape Raw. How many times a year do you think they go to the UK to tape Raw? I have a lot of UK listeners. You guys tell me, what is it, twice a year, three times a year max, maybe they go there to tape Monday Night Raw? I guarantee you, if they hit the O2 Arena in London every single month, those crowds would not be nearly as lively. Give it a few months. They would not be nearly as lively as they are now when they go over there. They were appealing, you know, you go back to 99, they were appealing to a totally different audience back then. Look at who was in the crowd for those shows in 99. Tons and tons and tons of teenage boys. And guys in their 20s. College kids. You had Austin flipping off McMahon. DX pointing at their crotch and telling people to suck it. Godfather coming out and talking about, you know, rolling a fatty for this pimp daddy. They knew their audience, and they gave the audience exactly what they wanted, which is apparently not what they do very much anymore. It's funny how it's a PG show now. Back then it was TV-14, and yet you had more kids watching Raw in the Attitude Era than you do now. But, you know, you can't do that kind of stuff with a PG show. The only thing I would say, what can be done to try to make the crowds more lively? You can make the show shorter. I've been to plenty of three-hour Raws, okay? It's one thing to watch it on TV. It's another thing to be in the building. Like, when you're watching a pay-per-view is 3 hours. WrestleMania is 4 hours, but you got these big matches. It's all action. It's a lot easier to kind of stay up for it. But, you know, you're at a Raw, you got the commercial breaks, you got a lot of talking and a lot of promos. Now it's 3 hours instead of two. I don't doubt that the length of the show kills a lot of the enthusiasm that the crowd has, unless you're giving them stuff that they just can't wait to see. And it's not like every Monday night it's a must-see show with big-time main events. Unless you're giving the people stuff like that, it's too long. So you can make the show shorter. That's one thing you could do. And give the people what they want. You know, give these guys on TV a little more creative freedom on promos and such. I mean, I mentioned the anniversary of Austin 316 earlier, okay? 20-year anniversary. That would never have happened today. Never. It could not happen. Nobody handed Austin a piece of paper and said, hey, you know, this would be a funny line. Say this. He came up with that himself. Somebody said, hey, listen, you know, you're wrestling Jake. You're going to win. Jake's born again. And Austin's like, I got it. And it took off. Who knows how many more guys might have taken off over the last 5 years, 10 years, if they had that same kind of freedom. CM Punk sort of did. He made it work on a PG show. You can't just blame it on PG. I'm just saying, like, all the stuff they got away with then, you could not get away with that today, so you've got to adapt. It's like Seinfeld. I'm almost positive I've used this as an example before. Seinfeld aired on NBC. There was a famous episode of Seinfeld that was all about masturbation, okay? but they couldn't use that word on TV. I get, you know, us here in America, there are people listening in Europe right now who are like, what the hell is wrong with you Americans? Like, you bleep all these words out and everything. Over there in Europe, they're a lot more laid back about this kind of thing. It's because apparently we're all pussies over here. But anyway, NBC, they, oh, this, you know, you can't say the word masturbation on TV. You can't say jerk off. You can't say masturbation. So Larry David and the writers on Seinfeld, they had to come up with a creative, clever way because they wanted this to be the theme of the show. How can we refer to this if we're not going to use the M word? And so they came up with this clever little phrase where the characters on the show, they came up with this contest to see who can go the longest without, you know, doing the deed. And they're like, who is the master of their domain? And you know what? It actually made it funnier. Because instead of just coming out and saying the word, which is easy enough to do, they had to come up with a different way to do it, and it actually made the show funnier. And that's one of, like, the all-time classic episodes of the show. So the way I look at it is this. Yes, it's PG now. Yes, there's certain words you can't get away with unless you're The Rock. Okay, or like the very top guys, John Cena, they'll let him every now and then let a son of a bitch slip, or the word ass. You know, they do sometimes use that kind of language on the show, but it's nothing like it used to be. I mean, the guys, unless you are a top guy, you've got the handcuffs on. You're like fucking Houdini in the chains, okay? And you got to find your way out. It just makes it that much more difficult, but if anything, it makes you work harder. Okay, it's a PG show. You can't use this word. You can't say that. Well, you know what? You know what part of your job is? You got to come up with a clever way to get around it. Try to say the same thing you want to say, but, you know, not have it come off as completely corny. Just come up with a different way of saying it. It's almost like it's an extra challenge for these guys, but it's an extra challenge that I think they probably just don't need. I'm not even talking about going out there and cursing and using words like that. I'm talking about, and Austin and people will talk about this all the time, and he's in the back. He talks to these guys, so he would know. CM Punk was just, UFC apparently just started their own podcast, and CM Punk was a guest on there, and they asked him about stuff like that. He was saying the same thing. They're too handcuffed. They're too hands-on when it comes to this stuff. Word for word, here, read this. Some guys, you know, Chris Jericho, I'm sure, is not being handed a piece of paper and saying, hey, read this word for word. You know, but I guarantee you that, you know, some of these new guys coming up from NXT probably are. And that's a big part of the problem. You will never have another Austin 316 as long as that's what's going on. But, you know, if wrestling is not hot, then it's not hot. And right now, it's not hot the way it used to be. If it was hot, Raw ratings would be going up, not down. 99 was just the perfect storm of everything coming together for them at the right time, and they won the wrestling war by that point. WCW was on the way down. They were picking up some of their audience. You know, you don't even have a WCW now. There is no other audience to pick from. You've got to build your base. That's why I always laugh when people say, why don't they just put Raw on the network? You've got USA Network, or even if they went to like an NBC or an ABC or something like that. I mean, forget the commercials and the advertising and stuff like that, because I don't know how much money they're bringing in. I don't know if they're bringing in any money on that. I think USA controls all the advertising. But you've got to be on television if you want to build your audience. You're never going to build your audience if you're on your own network. You know, Joe Blow on the street, who's not a wrestling fan, is not going to suddenly wake up one morning and say, fuck, I need to subscribe to WWE Network. That's not going to happen. The network exists. And Vince said this when they went to first create the network, when they ran into those problems many years ago, when they were trying to find the new TV deal, and there was nobody who was interested. And they had to go crawling back to USA, and that scared the shit out of them. And Vince said, you know, we're never going to be in this situation again. I'm not going to allow that to happen. We're going to build our own network, and if ever we're in the same position, at least we have the network to fall back on, which is true. They have their own network. They can put their shows on there if they're desperate and they have to. But when this deal comes up with USA in 2019, they're not pulling their shows off there to put them on the network just to boost subscriptions. They're going to want a new TV deal, and they're going to want to make $100 million or $200 million or whatever it is USA is going to pay them, because to just take the shows and put them on the network is suicide. That's why they don't do it. So you want to liven the crowds up a little bit. You make the show shorter, because also, you know, you give people too much of what they want. They don't want it anymore. You want to leave them wanting more. So make the show shorter and make the shows fun. It's actually really simple. Jordan from Hatboro, Pennsylvania. Why did Nash versus Hogan never happen in 1998? It seemed like the Wolfpack versus NWO Hollywood storyline had a lot of heavy hitters and a lot of potential big money matches that could have taken place, and it seemed like the best blow-off would have been a Nash versus Hogan match, possibly at Starrcade. If that were the case, I'd probably say Sting or Bret Hart would be good candidates to face Goldberg for the title at Starrcade. Were backstage politics involved? Why did the match never happen? I think you just answered your own question. Nash versus Hogan, I have no idea how they even would have figured out who was going to go over in that match. I can't see Kevin Nash being like, okay, sure, I'll lay down for Hulk. And Hulk had the full creative control. He wasn't laying down for Nash. I think that's the answer right there. Michael from London. What is the greatest and most significant Undertaker return? That's a good point. You know, has anybody had more returns than The Undertaker has over the years? I don't even think like Kane and Big Show are even close to having the number of returns. Not turns. Turns, they got Undertaker beat. I'm talking returns. I think Undertaker has to be the undisputed king. Well, you got plenty to choose from. I would say, it's weird. You put the word significant in there at the end, and that kind of changes it a little bit. If you were going to say the most significant, you'd probably have to say his return as the Dead Man at WrestleMania 20, which I was excited to get the Dead Man character back. Once I saw him, I wasn't so excited anymore, and the match was the shits. So that's definitely not my favorite. In my opinion, the greatest Undertaker return, hands down, was at Judgment Day 2000, when he debuted as the American Badass. And I didn't even like the American Badass deal at the time. I wanted the Dead Man back. But that was the most electric of all of his returns. The most fun of all of his returns. People were losing their minds when he rode out there on that motorcycle. And you had The Rock was in the ring. It was the final fall of the Iron Man match between Triple H and The Rock. And The Rock was just being beaten down by DX and the whole McMahon-Helmsley faction. And you've got 30 seconds left ticking away on the clock for the Iron Man match. And Undertaker comes in the ring. Just, you know, they called him the American Badass. He came off like a total badass here. He's got the long leather coat. He's got the shades. He's got the bandana. He comes into the ring, and he just wipes everybody out. He throws Triple H out of the ring. He punches Vince in the face. And I don't know if he broke his nose or not, but he connected because Vince came up. His nose was bleeding. And he went to go chokeslam Stephanie, and the people got louder. And it was just, it was nuts. It was awesome. Kicked a lot of ass that night. That would get my vote. That's the greatest Undertaker return out of all of them. Jerry from Omaha. Just recently, I watched a wrestling challenge video from September 1992. Supposedly, this was the debut of the Comet Kid, who would later become Max Moon in the WWF. Of course, Max Moon would gain fame in WCW as Conan. Well, Conan was already a big star long before he ever got to WCW. In Mexico, he was a big, big star. But anyway, reading up on Conan's Wikipedia page, it says that Conan and Vince had a disagreement, and Conan abruptly left in 1992. I was just wondering what their issue was, and also, what do you think of the Comet Kid Max Moon gimmick? Watching this wrestling challenge match, he was different than any other gimmick on the roster at the time, plus the superhero nature of the character would have been loved by kids. To me, this could have been something big for Conan at that time. Well, according to Conan, he was already making a ton of money in Mexico. He was making more than he would have been making in WWE at the time. I think what happened, or the reason he left, is he started missing TV tapings. I don't know if he was, you know, instead of showing up with the tapings, he was taking shots in Mexico, or he was, I don't know what his rationale was for it, but I think he was missing some TV tapings. Once that happened, they got Paul Diamond to replace him in the Max Moon costume, and they didn't need Conan anymore, so they fired him. He got fired. That's what happened. It did look like a cool costume, I will give you that. Conan has said that the original one, I don't know how different the original costume was from what we ended up seeing on TV. Like, Max Moon wrestled on the first Raw, you know, against Shawn Michaels. And actually, the funny thing about that is Paul Diamond, who was in the costume, was Shawn Michaels' old tag team partner many years earlier. But I don't know how different that costume was from the original. The way Conan tells it, you know, he's talking about this costume, and it's so big, he needed like 8 boxes just to transport it from one city to the next. And it cost Vince like something like $13,000 to make this thing. It's nuts. I don't know that a single match with Conan in the Max Moon costume ever aired on TV. I know he wrestled, but I've been on YouTube and stuff. I can't find a single one. The only thing you come up with, and there is, if you go on YouTube, you'll find there's a match on there. It's very grainy. The quality is shit, but it's the Comet Kid. It might be on like Primetime Wrestling or something. And so I thought, okay, this must be a Conan match for sure, because if they're still calling him Comet Kid, it probably is Conan. This is before they even changed the name to Max Moon. And it's definitely not Conan. I mean, if you get that brief glimpse of the guy's face, it's clearly Paul Diamond under the costume. So I have never seen Conan wrestle as Comet Kid, Max Moon, whatever, because I'm not even sure any of that footage ever made TV. Sal in San Antonio, I was watching the Acolytes versus Public Enemy from Sunday Night Heat, March 7, 1999. I know there was heat between Public Enemy and the WWE locker room. The match seemed like a legit beatdown by Bradshaw and Farouk. The Dominator by Farouk at the end in particular looked nasty. Was this a case of Bradshaw and Farouk handing out justice to these guys? Did WWE know this was going to happen? That heat match is one of the worst one-sided ass-kickings I've ever seen. Back when I was still writing for the Layfield Report, JBL posted an entire blog just about that match, because it's taken on such a reputation over the years. Now, what he claimed is, he says it wasn't a shoot. They didn't have any problem with the Public Enemy. They were willing to go along with anything that was asked. And, you know, was he romanticizing his version and making himself and Farouk out to be nicer and come out looking better than maybe they should? It's very possible, because this is just their side of the story. But as he tells it, it was not a shoot, or at least that was not their intent when they started out. They were at the gorilla position getting ready to go out for the match. And all of a sudden, they're standing there, and Public Enemy, it might have been Johnny Grunge or whoever, turns around to him and decides, you know what, I guess the finish was going to be them putting Public Enemy through a table. The table was their gimmick. I mean, this is before the Dudleys even came into WWE. You associate tables with Public Enemy. That's just how it was. And I don't know if they just felt like it would kill their gimmick or what, but they turn around and go, you know what, we don't want to go through the table. We're going to change the finish. And according to Farouk, Bradshaw, he's just like, okay, whatever. And again, I find that hard to believe too, that he would just, you know, he would just stand there and be like, okay, fine, you want to change the finish? Go ahead. But that's what he said. And so they're standing there now. I guess Public Enemy maybe went out, and JBL sees Jerry Briscoe. And Briscoe comes over to him, and he says, these guys have to go through the table. That's the finish. You've got to make sure you go with the original finish. And Bradshaw said, all right, we'll make it happen. I don't know how long it's going to take for us out there to do it, but we'll get it done. And they went out there, and they got their finish. APA got DQ'd, and I think it was Johnny Grunge. He went through the table that was outside on the floor. And JBL said, you know, when they went to the back when the match was over, Public Enemy didn't pitch a fit. They didn't complain. They walked up to the APA, and they just said thank you. And he thinks they just didn't know any better. You know, they showed up to the building apparently late that day. They made a lot of missteps that rubbed people the wrong way and got them heat with the locker room. And changing the finish of the match at the last second, if that's true, I'm sure that was just, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, because about a week later, they were released. Well, why else would they be released? Unless it was just a culmination of things, they weren't in the company for that long. But a week after this match, they're gone. They didn't last very long in WWE. Spencer from Keswick, Ontario, buy or sell on who had the better looking elbow drop, Macho Man Randy Savage or Shawn Michaels? Shawn had a good looking elbow, but he's no Macho Man. So this is a pretty easy one. I'm buying on Randy Savage. I'm selling on Shawn Michaels. I would not sell on HBK for very much, nor would I sell for HBK. But Savage's elbow was just picture perfect. And brutal, too. Don't forget, he collapsed Little Nature's lung in a match in WCW, although at that point, I guess Savage's hip was all messed up, and so he was kind of overcompensating for it, and the way he landed just straight down on Lil Nate. And you gotta remember, Charles Robinson is not a big guy. So what is he, maybe 150 pounds? So he's a tiny guy. Randy Savage at that point in WCW is gigantic. He's, God knows what chemicals he's got floating around in his bloodstream. He was as big as ever, all jacked to the gills. And so here's this guy coming off the top rope and just falling directly down on this guy. He told the story on Talk Is Jericho. He just put him in the hospital. He was all fucked up. Savage felt bad about it. But aside from when he was actually killing people with it, it looked great. I mean, that's what Savage was known for, right? The big elbow drop off the top. CM Punk, to kind of go to the opposite end of the spectrum, CM Punk had one of the worst elbow drops. And he did it as a tribute to Savage. But, you know, he savaged that move, is what he did. Punk's diving elbow looked comically bad. Frank from the Bronx, buy or sell. Steve Austin's Austin 316 speech at the King of the Ring in 1996, or Hulk Hogan's NWO speech at the Bash at the Beach in 1996. That was a month later. Man, think about all the freaking things that happened in 96. You had Austin 316 one month, and the next month Hogan turns heel and joins the NWO. Has there ever been a bigger summer in wrestling? Like, in terms of, like, two events that happened, I mean, at least in terms of, like, the major promotions, has there ever been, like, a bigger summer where two of these momentous, like, monumental events happened within a month of each other? It's incredible. Which was... buy or sell? Well, Frank's question here is, which had the bigger impact that year? Obviously, Hogan's speech had the bigger impact that year. I'm buying on that. I'm going to sell on Austin. But if you chop off the last part of your question and you just say which one had the bigger impact, I guess it really doesn't change my answer. I'm still buying on Hogan and I'm selling on Austin. I mean, I just got done talking about the Austin 316 anniversary and how even if that never happened, Austin still would have gone on to become a big star. So it's not like, you know, if the Austin speech doesn't happen, there is no Stone Cold. Stone Cold would have done just fine. Even without that, he would have come up with some other catchphrase. Maybe he wouldn't have sold as many t-shirts. But the Hogan speech, it's tied into the creation of the NWO. And the creation of the NWO, it changed everything. It's, I mean, you're still feeling the effects of that today. So you think about Austin 316, you still see Austin 316 shirts. You know what? You see more NWO shirts. I just saw there were like two NWO shirts right there on the hard camera during Raw last Monday. Talk about a lasting impact. So either way, I think the answer is the same. I would buy on the Hogan speech as far as the creation of the NWO, and I would sell on the Austin speech with the rationale that Austin would have gone on to become a big star no matter what. Without the Hogan heel turn and the creation of the NWO with him as part of it, that, you know what? That potentially changes a lot of things. And not for the better, as far as WCW goes. I mean, there was a lot that you could point to with the NWO leading to the destruction of the company. It wasn't the only thing. But the impact of the NWO with Hogan, it wouldn't have worked the way it worked with anybody else. You couldn't just put Sting in there. You couldn't put Luger, Savage. It had to be Hogan. And it paid off for them. So let's end with sad tweet. This week's sad tweet is from the official Impact Wrestling Twitter account. TNA people used to win this all the time for a while, and then it got quiet. This is the first time I think that the actual, like, TNA itself is winning for sad tweet. So someone tweeted at them during Impact on Tuesday with, I thought it was a pretty innocuous comment. You know, I thought. They said, how come 90% of the wrestlers in TNA are long-haired dudes with beards? Hashtag Impact on Pop. That's, I guess, the hashtag that they tweet out, and they tell you, if you're going to tweet about Impact, this is the official hashtag to use. This guy is clearly a TNA fan. He's clearly watching the show. There's absolutely nothing offensive about what he said. you know, it just sounds like a TNA fan watching the show making a mildly sarcastic comment. What an offense. Give this man 10 lashings. So this prompted TNA, i.e. Josh Matthews, to respond with this. Quote, "How come 90% of your tweets are stupid?" End quote. It's like that time Josh Matthews told Jim Ross to go away because he was old and his opinion didn't matter. I guarantee you it was Josh Matthews. Either way. The other person responded. They said, "It was an honest question about a trend that I noticed on the show." See, just a TNA fan. As if they don't have enough problems bringing in new fans. Now they're alienating the ones that they do have. So that's this week's sad tweet. If you have questions or sad tweet suggestions, you can hit me up on Twitter at Solomonster, or you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Don't forget to vote in our post-Raw poll when the show goes off the air each and every Monday night. Thumbs up, thumbs down. We will be back with a brand new episode next weekend. I guess that'll be July 4th weekend. Don't forget, we have the July 4th sale going on Pro Wrestling Tees in our store. It starts this Tuesday. This Tuesday, June 28th at 12 o'clock p.m. Central Time. It goes all the way to the following Tuesday. You get 20% off all of our shirts. So you can punch in the coupon code America when you go to check out. You get your discount. You get your sound off shirts. And I'm going to get a Facebook invite up on the fan page for anybody who wants to or thinks they may be part of our meetup that we're doing the day of SummerSlam, Sunday, August 21st, 2 o'clock in the afternoon at the KBH. What am I talking about? My God. There will be no date rape drugs at our meetup, I promise you. The KBH, Jesus Christ, I should just end the show now. There's no coming back from that. So I'm looking forward to seeing most of you. I will not roofie you, I promise. That's on August 21st. Well, I can't make any guarantees, but August 21st, that'll be our meetup. We're partnering with Mania Crawl, although after he hears this, he may not want to partner up with us anymore, which is totally understandable. So if you think you may be able to attend, RSVP to our invite that's going to be going up, if it's not already up on Facebook. I look forward to seeing all of you there. And that's going to do it. So until next weekend for episode 448, I am the Solomonster. I will see you right back here next weekend. Until then, be well, stay safe, and enjoy the week. We'll see you next time. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay. No, that's racist.
Well, no, it's...
Racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, "I'm not racist," yeah, those are the racists.
Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.